I've never said that.
You haven't said on your show 40 decapitated babies?
Never. About 40 babies being killed.
Oh, my God.
And some of them beheaded.
They're aggressive. They're very bad. They cut head of children, cut head of women. But we are stronger than them.
But see, have confirmed pictures of terrorists beheading
Israeli children. Prime Minister's spokesman just confirmed babies and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated in Kfar Aza.
Babies. There are head
atrocities that took place in that kibbutz. You did say that babies had been decapitated.
I can tell you that they, some of them, yeah, heads were cut off. This is what we're hearing from soldiers on the ground. And yes, they cut off heads. They cut off
heads. The fact that he indeed saw the heads of severed babies. And I know that the Israeli Prime Minister's office has also corroborated the news.
We have not seen the evidence of that. We have asked the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, three times to confirm those numbers. They have not yet.
Let me preface these remarks with I never, never, ever believe Israeli figures. I've been.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Going to be an important follow-up on a lot of propaganda. Of course, there's some developments in the food convoy attacks, which I'm actually kind of blown away that this can be because of how much attention that one story got. The fact that this keeps happening is actually pretty surprising to me, despite all of the horrendous actions being carried out by the Israeli government. Another food convoy again at the Al-Kuwaiti roundabout. As I can tell, this is now the third time they have set up a food convoy and shot at people in that location when they've gone for the food. This is a deliberate action, like I discussed in the flower massacre, which got that name because of all the attention that it got. It was, you know, there's been so many of these. They all deserve names of their own. We're going to talk about that story early on in this, but the main focus of today is going to be discussing the overwhelming amount of propaganda. And I don't just mean in the sense that we've seen it so far, the amount of lies and propaganda about everything. I mean, specific new really big pushes about going, I think going a little bit, I don't even want to say further, because that's not really even the right word to use, because they've, I mean, how far they've gone thus far is actually, you know, I've never seen it before, but this is going in a new direction. I would say more so in the direction of outright faking, in the sense of not just framing things differently or telling you a different story, but creating fake stickers that say rape is resistance. Things that we have, you know, we'll get into from, it's so inherently ridiculous to argue that anybody who is actually supporting the Palestinian resistance movement or the idea that any peoples who are oppressed or occupied deserve the right to fight back armed resistance, Fourth Geneva Convention, are somehow going to be of the mind that, yeah, rape is okay too, right? Everything we're discussing is all in line with international law, but rape is resistance because that lines up, right? No, that's what the people framing this in a dishonest Zionist, you hate Jews because you fight for Palestine way, are claiming that what these people say. So it's really clumsy in that way, or the idea that babies are occupiers too. As you have people screaming about the idea of children and on either side of this, those of us that are fighting for humanity, you know, Jewish Voices for Peace, Torah, Judaism, or any group like that that is standing up and saying, I don't care what religion you are, that's crazy, or anybody else pointing this out, are all acknowledging that children on any side of this are not part of any kind of warfare. But then let's pretend like we'll just, you know, it will go over all of it. And it's insulting and it is inhuman. because all of it adds up to justifying more murder. And that's what really gets disgusting and upsetting about it all. But we're going to go through this point after point and talk about how many things like this are popping up, how much is happening, and what it's being turned into. It's hard. But there's a lot of other things we're going to get into to begin with in regard to the starvation situation, how much that's being covered up, and really kind of all does kind of pull back into the propaganda side of this. But a big push at the end about, you know, because of that point, because of the push of propaganda and kind of going into the realm of false flag territory, faking hate crimes, faking, which essentially that's what these stickers are, but going even further than that and showing you the overwhelmingly obvious history of Israelis faking hate crimes, which in no way is to suggest that every Israeli would do that, every Jewish person would do that, or every any group would do that, because that's ignorance to broad stroke. We all know that, except only in weird compartmental areas we pretend like that's what people mean. It's obvious this has happened, and it's obvious it stems from a Zionist operation, an agenda. And I'll go over all of it for you, have in previous shows, stemming right back to the ADL getting caught faking Nazi marches. This is not hyperbole. The problem is that we fail to connect these things with current situations, or people are afraid to talk about it because you'll be called a racist. We just have to be able to be brave enough to honestly converse about these things. And that's partially why I feel like we're getting so much attack, so many attacks and so much suppression, because we're, as a platform, unafraid, whether it's about Israel or foreign policy or anything else, to wade into these, any conversation. And let's look at the facts. Let's break it down. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? It's crazy that anybody acts like some conversations are taboo or off topic or whatever it is. But we're going to go through all of this today and do our best to break it down in ways that are digestible that you can share and discuss. And I want to start just on the note of censorship. I found it's interesting. For those that have been following what we've been dealing with, we have our GIMP said go and so on down in the show notes if you'd like to check it out. GIMPsendGo.com/SaveTLav. While we're in the process of going through this, I'm getting call after call and email after email from people saying, I just tried to sign up for this. And by the way, not just Give, Send, Go, just all over through the website. And they try to use the credit card and it says it's declined. Not because the card's bad. They check, they call the card. No, the card's fine. Your money's there. This is being turned down. And realize, not just from the one or the other. I'm hearing this from multiple different directions. Someone tried to use the donation platform on the website and they told the card got turned down. Someone tried to do it through Give, Send, Go. How do you frame that other than TLAV being blacklisted? I think that's really very obvious. Instagram just recently censored one of our posts we're going to start with. Twitter seems to be, Jason was telling me this as he's uploading our new videos for the clips, apparently are blurring out some of these videos, no matter how, what he does. It just can't, so we had to delete him. He didn't even post the one from today. Like, it's just this nonstop cycle. Just well, notes from the day, but all kinds of stuff that just continue to pop up that I find really, really interesting. But we'll go through much as we can today. Let's see. I want to start with just a shout out actually with to Suppressed Voice for that clip I played to start. I believe he made that. I think his name is on the thing unless he put it on there. But either way, I see out for him first. So Suppressed News, great clip, because it's important to see that stuff, right? To see the juxtaposition of the lie, which, by the way, is kind of the reason that it kind of gave me the thought process for how I wanted to frame the show today. The idea that it's and not really, really what we've been doing the whole time. It's just that easy. It's right in front of you. I never said that. Well, yeah, you did. It's right there. And it's like, it's just so constantly obvious. And yet we're always engaging with these false, whether they know it or not, two-party paradigm screamers. You get the false media mainstream who continue to keep you trapped in this dynamic where they're somehow legitimate, even though we know they lie all the time or are completely partisan or continue to gaslight for things like we're dealing with. Even somebody like him, Piers Morgan, who now pretends like he's pushing in and going against Israel, continues to obfuscate where it matters in plenty of ways. Either way, it's just that easy. If we have all these examples of all these different times they have blatantly, not by accident, but knowingly misled you and then continue to do so, why is it valid to take anything they say at face value? That goes for anybody, whether that's the president of the United States, the leader of North Korea, you know, whatever you want to talk about, anybody who says anything, you should go, if they've lied repeatedly, multiple times, we can prove, then we should go, maybe it's happening again. I don't even know why I would need to say that out loud, but we're in a position today where people just can't put the pieces together because they're all what I just said to start with. They watch the show and they go, wow, that's very obvious. Then they go watch somebody on a partisan narrative that gives you something that makes it make sense in a way that allows you to still stand on one side instead of acknowledging the obvious truth, which is in the middle of the two-party illusion. People want to feel comfortable. They want to feel part of something, and they take advantage of that. My daily harp on the two-party illusion. I hope people are paying attention, but great clips, press news. I think that's an important clip. We'll come back to that focus. I wanted to show you some of the censorship really quickly. Now, weirdly enough, they don't show you. I mean, I don't even know why it's even any different. There's been a long time since YouTube or any of them actually gave you process. They pretend they did. They, you know, they'll usually go, here's the thing, and you click on it, it's a dead link or whatever. So anybody that's gone through this knows how wildly unaccountable it is, even though the people that are supposed to be holding them accountable for giving you that process don't care. This whole thing is broken. The whole thing. The entire media ecosystem is designed to suppress what we're doing in the sense of independent media, not the mainstream alternative media, but the actual independent alternative media that care about the truth far more than your partisan sides. My point, though, is that this is constant like this, where, oh, here's my T-Lab image. What video was it, right? Oops, hold on. What did I just do? Oh, I just zoomed in too much. My point is, it doesn't show you anything. I don't know what video it was, what happened, what was said. You know, it's impossible. And I'll show you, click through, okay, see why. Let's see what happened. You click see why. Here's what it says. The same thing we showed you last time. It looks like you shared or sent symbols, praise, or support of people and organizations we define as dangerous or followed them. Or followed them? So you're telling me you're allowing people that are dangerous that you define as dangerous or and you're giving them accounts on Instagram, but if I follow those accounts, you'll censor me? Think about how ridiculous that is. I mean, actually stupid, out loud, ridiculous. But that ridiculous follow them aside, the point is, you're telling me I'm sharing symbols or supporting dangerous organizations. What does that even mean? Give me an example. Because here's what's hilarious. Even if we're talking about Hamas or whatever they want to tell you is a dangerous organization, or just the entire country of Iran, you know, ridiculous things like that. You show me where I am supporting them or praising them or sharing symbols that none of that is happening. We're objectively conversing about the situation and breaking down provable lies. That is actually the problem. The best they can do is pretend that I'm supporting a dangerous movement, when in fact, I'm highlighting a dangerous movement and I'm showing how, regardless of what you support, the whole conversation is allowing people to be killed. Calling for peace in every possible situation. Ultimately, they tell you it amounts to supporting violence. Of course, it says goes against community guidelines. See the rule. See what it says more specifically. See, here's what it says. Here are examples of what they're claiming I'm doing. Praising a terrorist attack. Supporting violence against a particular group of people. Supporting or promoting harmful criminal activity. It's just such a joke. You guys know me well enough, and so does anybody that watches this show. Quite frankly, even those that hate me know that that's not something that I would do. Praising a terrorist attack? I mean, even if you pretend that we're talking about 10-7. Am I going, yay, look at what they did. It's great. That's praising. No, what I'm telling you is a static, obvious reality of international law, which is that act was protected under international law, Fourth Geneva Convention, which if you censor me all you want, it's still a fact. That is not me saying, hooray, good, fantastic. The point is, whether you think that, that's not what that is. And I have never, ever once said that. I've only ever stood by the facts, which is that is a legal act. Crimes that were committed around it are still illegal. I've said that 1,000 times. It's just so insulting for them to try to frame somebody. It's like Ben Shapiro saying the people calling for ceasefire are trash, or Elon Levy saying that if you're saying ceasefire, it means dirty Jew. They're literally claiming these things today, saying that means you're calling for people to be killed. Why not just add more onto it? Why not just pretend it also means that you hate something else? Why not go for the hat trick? It's just you're just naming things that have no connection to what they're saying, or it's just supporting violence. Supporting violence as I'm literally calling for non-violence in every possible way and everything that I do since I've started this platform. Supporting or promoting harmful criminal activity. I mean, it's painful. But this is my point. Not that it's happening, that this is the best they can do. Because I knew this was going to happen. Trust me, I'm not going, oh my God, I knew this was going to happen. Every day this happens to me. I half the time I don't even point it out. Oh yeah, and here's Facebook. Guess what? Same thing. So I'm willing to bet you it's this video. Haiti chaos, Israel's blood diamonds, and the widening Gaza narrative and the ongoing Palestinian torture. Right. Every single one of those things are specifically cited to provable information. Haiti chaos is obviously just about the chaos, and my personal opinion about what's going on, I doubt it's about that. Israel's blood diamonds is a very, very real, provable, open conversation about Israel and their blood diamond operation in Congo, and how often or near ubiquitously they're using child labor. It's the static reality over there. Or widening narrative gap. I'm probably just about more lies about God. The point is simple, that it's provable information. But here's what they called it. Same thing. It looks like you shared or sent symbols, praise, support to people and organizations. So you see how coordinated this is? None of that happened. Using the same excuse to censor, but I don't care about Instagram, Facebook, or any of the rest of it. I care that you see it and you support it and you share the content. That's all I care about. So keep censoring me. I love it. Thomas Massey points out something about TikTok I thought was important just to add, since we're talking about this to start. He says the so-called TikTok ban, which I've already pointed out, by the way, as he says, is a Trojan horse. The president will be given the power to ban websites. You see where this is going? Not just apps. The person breaking the news, the new law is deemed to be, the person breaking the new law is deemed to be the U.S. internet hosting service or app store, not the foreign adversary. So you can read the bill. It literally says, so my point being, as we're being suppressed and censored more than I've ever seen in my lifetime, or my engagement with TLAV since I founded this platform. Now they're saying, now because of the idea that you're, because of the right-wing push to pretend only TikTok bad guy, because China, even though all of them are the same thing. And in fact, TikTok is not even as, look, I think all of these platforms are controlled, whatever that would mean, by governments. Because governments would not allow something like this. This tool was built to be a manipulator. So, but on the surface of it, it's not as simple as saying China owns TikTok, just like it's not as simple as saying the US government owns Twitter. It's the same situation, but for them to just pretend that it's China and not go after TikTok or Twitter for the same reason, it's the same old nonsensical two-party illusion BS. So my point is, because they've marshaled this push to go after TikTok because of that, which, by the way, again, same point, it's now opened the door for them to be able to censor websites and a lot of other stuff we've already talked about. Massey's the only one seemingly calling it out. Next thing you know, we're going to start seeing websites get knocked down. You think that's going to be unique to left-leaning websites? All these people pushing this on the right, thinking they're fighting against only the left, have a hard time coming. But that's always how this goes. It's too bad they can't see through it or don't want to. Now, let's start with the Haiti discussion just really quickly. Dan Cohen shared some interesting stuff that kind of added on to what I was discussing about this. And by the way, in case you didn't hear it in the show on the 10th, this image that I used was not an actual image of torture. That, just in case you didn't hear that, because I said in the show was I wouldn't have been comfortable using it like this as a meme if it was. This was a guy demonstrating in Israel, protesting, claiming this is what they did to him, and he was protesting that. So regardless, the point is we know this kind of torture happens, and I wanted to use it as the meme to make the point, right? This is Gaza right now being tortured. Here is U.S. aid pretending to help, but actually making it far, far, far worse. And here's Israel in the background laughing it up, not doing a thing, other than murdering everybody, but I mean in regard to aid. Now, we talked about Haiti chaos. We talked about the idea of how this is all... Well, first of all, this was the thing that caught my attention. And Jason just put up a clip for us on Twitter about essentially the cannibalism or claim that very weirdly came out of these random like Daily Star websites that I don't think you should give any attention to, my personal opinion, and that got kind of jumped on by a lot of right wing websites, which I don't know, just again showing you that there's not a lot of source material here. They all said this happened and it trickled through the right wing media, even though there was really, it all stemmed back to one person who didn't prove it, who claimed he saw it on a picture, said he saw people eating people, no evidence about it, and that became, there's some, and then even the article would say, well, it's not very widespread, that got turned into roving games of, or I didn't say roving, that's what I said, but the gangs of cannibals eating people in the streets. Well, how do you think people are going to read that? That sounds like gangs roaming around eating people. And it's not the reality as far as I could tell. And then I got further and brought in everything that I know about this discussion of Haiti and U.S. involvement and everything. And it became very clear to me that this is about, at least as I saw it, the effort to try to get someone out of the way because they're pushing for a transnational government like they do in any other country they want to control, because they're the person who's there, who is still previously, in my opinion, a U.S. puppet, is no longer playing ball. It's just this constant game of, you know, illegal. It's, you know, like a Game of Thrones kind of concept, while the U.S. government's the illegal actor just moving all the pieces around. No concern for how that affects the people on the ground. Now, that was just my kind of reading the tea leaves, essentially. But the interesting part about it was that I think pretty clearly this whole argument was a hype story. And that brought in for me the idea of who brought this forward. Was this Israel trying to create some kind of chaotic thing over here to distract us? Just throwing a thought out there. Is it the United States trying to justify what they're pushing for, which is the need to go in and occupy because bad people doing bad things, and they're the ones driving that to reality, which is their MO? These are things for you to consider. But watch this clip. It's actually a good clip, and here's the episode. But here's what Dan said to add to this. I thought this was interesting. So this was the guy. This guy's nickname is Barbecue. Jimmy Barbecue Scherzier. I'm probably mispronouncing his last name. The point was, this is one of the leaders of these gangs. And again, these are the names that are being given by the U.S. media. So it's probably, for all we know, they're charitable organizations. I mean, I'm kind of being facetious. But that's, you know, just because they're called gangs from our media or terrorist organizations, we should realize by now how often these things are misrepresented. Regardless, this is one of the gangs that they're being called, and this is the one of the leaders, and he's the one being accused of being a cannibal. So Dan Cohen, who I highly respect in the regard to foreign policy, says, why are we seeing a sudden disinformation campaign? So he believes disinformation, portraying Jimmy Barbecue as a cannibal. He says, watch how he treks through the slums of Haiti to ignite revolutionary consciousness among the masses, and you'll understand. He's trying to turn Haiti, according to Dan Cohen, into a productive and prosperous country that benefits the whole population. The complete opposite of the dystopia that U.S. imperialism created. Completely agree. I don't know personally whether this is what Jimmy's doing or not, but the point is that this is what the people believe. And it's obvious because it's the reality. Haitian people are very aware, more than most countries, that they have been suppressed. They're artificially held in this poverty because they're being exploited. I shared a whole, and by the way, I forgot I was going to include, I ended up for some reason closing these links before, and I couldn't get them to reopen again. I said that down here. Really, it was a lot of the articles from the website. Just search Haiti on the TLAV website. You'll find all those articles where I discuss the Clintons and the overlap. I ended up closing them. I wasn't able to include them in the links for the show, for the podcast, and the last one. So I'm sorry about that. Rarely happens, but either way, the point was there's a lot of discussion there about how it's been exploited long before the Clintons and law and well after, and still happening. Now, he says this: the man they're smearing as a savage is leading a revolution, which is obviously, if you believe that, and that seems to line up for me with what I was talking about and what I can prove, it's a no-brainer that the U.S. government wouldn't want that to happen. So they blame everything else. They step in, and they call them terrorists, call them gangs, and they use that very the lie as the justification to go in and maintain their destabilization campaign so they can exploit everything they want. If you think this is not the history and the reality of the current U.S. government, you're lying to yourself, guys. It is the most embarrassing open secret in the world that Americans are still grappling to understand. It's too bad. But it's because of the two-party paradigm that we can't fully wrap our minds around that. Because what happens is one side points to the left, the other side points to the right. That's the only part that's really doing the problem. It's their policy that caused this, their policy that caused that. And we fail to recognize that it's all of them all profiting off the problem while we, like the scarecrow, point in the opposite direction. But he also writes, many leftists denounce Jimmy, Barbecue, because his weapons, I talked about this yesterday, I'm glad I saw this, because they came from the United States, or so that was what was being reported broadly. Because his weapons, like all weapons in Haiti, he says, come from the United States. This is kind of what I was reading as well, like the same thing with Venezuela or any other place we talk about. They're the ones dumping weapons into anyone that will do what they want, and that ends up getting sold, it circulates through the country. It's the same point they make about the PMU in Iraq. The United States is literally arming and funding Iraq because, at least while for a long time, I'm not sure how that's working now, seeing as how even their government for a while now has been resistant, even though they're essentially the government put in place by the United States. The point is they were funding them. They were arming them to fight in general for a long time. My point is that's where the PMU gets armed, from the Iraqi government, the part in Iraq anyway. So they're working with the same arms the U.S. government's giving them. So does that mean they're working for the U.S. government? Well, it could, but it doesn't in this case, clearly, at least as I see it. So the point is, because the U.S. government is so frivolous and so completely negligent with the way that it dumps weapons all over to anybody that they want to use while pretending anybody else is the worst arms trafficker in the world, that causes U.S. weapons to be pretty widespread. But he says, who else obtained their weapons in the United States? The Haitian revolutionaries, who had been fighting alongside Simon Bolivar in Venezuela, right? Now he posts this article, the image of a book you can read. He says the Houthis and Hamas use weapons from the enemy. The Cuban revolutionaries did too. It's a basic concept of guerrilla warfare. It doesn't matter where the weapons come from. The only question is what they're used for. Now, I would still argue that because they seem to be having pretty much predominantly U.S. weapons, it should at least keep the question in your mind. Maybe in case something else comes up tomorrow that goes, oh, maybe he is a U.S. asset. You know, all just consider these things. But overall, 100% agree with Dan Cohen. I think that what we were going from what I said yesterday and then adding what he said, I think this is pretty damn clear, which is not hard to see. It's the same old story. But just because that tends to be what we see throughout history, and that so therefore we tend to lean that way when it comes to a new event, that's probably the U.S. doing that. Never fall in that trap, though. Always question that it might be just simply the opposite or just neither of those things. It could just be organic. But that being said, the evidence points in a very obvious direction. So starting on the point of Israel general, but the reality that this did not start on October 7th, which it's amazing that we even have to say that because of how prominent this conversation has been for so long, so many times we have these spur ups and conversations of bombings in Gaza. And yet we act like this just started on October. Like, it's just like, I don't even think anybody believes that. Definitely not the Zionists. They know that. So who's falling for this? Who hasn't seen the coverage over the last 20, 30 years? You see what I mean? Like, it's a strange thing that we live, and this is the broken media dynamic. This is the situation, this ecosystem that is so corrupted that they're able to kind of keep this zombie going, even though everybody sees through it. So here's what Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur, said on the 9th. And this is based off this tweet down here I'll read next. She said, this 10-year-old declaration, which is very powerful, is a stark reminder that the war, in quotes, did not, because it's not a war, it's an illegal occupation and ethnic cleansing and genocide, did not start with the terrible day 10/7, which, again, as much as they pretend otherwise, nobody, not it myself, not her, anybody that I've engaged with, hasn't said there's been crimes committed on October 7th and what happened was terrible. People were hurt. And it's not because we're arguing that it's not a leak, because she has too. It is a legal act of armed resistance. But they're civilians in general, right? That's the point. And I understand the argument of settlers, what Hamas would say. The point is still just from a side of humanity. We can argue that there are people that just because they're there doesn't mean they are lock, stock, and in with the Zionist agenda and don't care about all Gazans. Now, I'll sure hell give you the argument that most people in Israel seem to be swayed by that argument. But it's also clear there's huge portions of Jewish people, Israelis, and everything else that don't agree with that. My point is there were civilians that definitely suffered, got kidnapped. Nobody should be okay with that, right? But we can then within that acknowledge that most of what was done was a legal act, right? That is the reality of the situation. They just don't like framing it honestly, right? So my point is when she says the terrible day of 10/7, they love pretending like anybody arguing what genocide is happening right now somehow doesn't care about the other. It's just a hollow argument that they keep putting forward because they're losing control of the narrative. But it says, my last report, she says, to be released soon, to keep an eye out for that, finds that the last Gaza assault has intensified methods of warfare used in other ISR's offensives, bringing them to a new unprecedented level. Now here, this is the tweet from, Chantal Maloney shared this, and then I'm going to read you this from Richard Falk. It says, almost 10 years ago, I was rapporteur of this joint declaration. All right, so she's just citing what he said here. Now, this is really important. This is a post coming from Richard Falk. Joint declaration. Now, this goes back. This is from the previous engagement. I believe it was called, it says it in here. I forget. Operation. I'll read it. We'll find it through there. But this is one of the previous acts of indiscriminate bombing in Gaza, which is previously called a response of self-defense to the act of whatever, the same thing that we're seeing right now. And so this is my point to start with this, to show you we've been here already. We've had the same kind of, not the same awakening, not the same amount of people that are finally seeing through it that has forced the corporate media to pretend like they care. No, not that. But we did have the people in the circles they're supposed to listen to saying, my God, this is terrible. They're murdering children. They just didn't care because the average people didn't get wind of it like is happening now. But it already happened. They already spoke up. The people involved with the UN and elsewhere were like, gee, this is absolutely horrific. Why isn't anybody doing it about this? Then we just drift away from it. Now it's happening again. And that is what happens when you don't do something about it, right? Never again, right? It's supposed to mean something, not only for certain people, right? Joint declaration by international law experts on Israel's Gaza offensive. A joint declaration of international law experts from around the world who are listed below as endorsers. Okay, so these are international law experts from around the world who signed this, who endorsed this and believe in what's being written here. Just take a look. Now, I mean, I'm not going to read them all, but UN Special Rapporteur, UN Special Rapporteur, Professor of International Law, United Nations International Law Commission. I mean, these are people that have credentials. You know, not necessarily in any other context you should blindly listen to them or anybody for that matter. But as I've said many times since October 7th, that these are people historically before then that they, the Israeli government, the people, well, not so much them in the UN side of it, but just any other element of authority have always told you to look to in these circumstances. Now, suddenly, they're all Hamas. Makes perfect sense. The point is that these people have clout in the corporate media, in the international community, in the mainstream media, and yet, weirdly, they all got ignored when it mattered. Same thing's happening today. But, you know, Harvard, Georgetown, and just look how many there are. 142 leading people in the international community and academics spoke up and said this. Now, I'm just going to read you a part of it. It says, as international and criminal law scholars, human rights defenders, legal experts, and individuals who firmly believe in the rule of law and in the necessity for its respect in times of peace and more so in times of war, we feel the intellectual and moral duty to denounce the grave violations, mystification, and disrespect of the most basic principles of the laws of armed conflict and of the fundamental human rights of the entire Palestinian population committed during the ongoing Israeli offensive on the Gaza Strip. I mean, just think about that. Did it start on October 7th? This is the most insulting argument of all, because everybody, including them, including the international community, including the corporate media who pretend otherwise, all know this. It says, we also condemn the launch of rockets from the Gaza Strip, right? As every indiscriminate attack against civilians, regardless of the identity of the perpetrators, is not only illegal international law, but also morally intolerable. Like, so my point in this is the same thing I would say about the Houthis and the ships. They're simply acknowledging that, yes, if we're going to be strict about this, that's also a crime. But however, it says, as also implicitly noted by the UN Human Rights Council in its resolution of the 23rd July 2014, the two parties of the conflict cannot be considered equal. And their actions, once again, appear to be of incomparable magnitude. And then, because what they're highlighting right there is the idea this is an occupation. You can't pretend that they're equal odds. These are not two states at war. So it changes the whole dynamic, right? So even though they are firing rockets, that falls into the concept of armed resistance. But if that's going towards a civilian area, well, then you could, goes into the realm of the potential crimes. But this is my point about the rockets. You can't keep pretending that because they don't have guidance system, that means the intent was to do so, and then argue otherwise that it doesn't. I showed you this already in this dynamic. I think this was the first couple of weeks where they kept pretending that, you know, it went both ways when they wanted it to. That's pretty much most of this stuff. But either way, at the end of the day, it is an undeniable fact that this is an occupied territory, so that means they have the right to armed resistance, which changes the entire thing, which is why they continue to pretend it's not. Even though every international entity with any standing in the community has always maintained that, and they still do to this day. Not 2005 before, but ever since, and the same thing now, because it is always occupied. I mean, the fact that the United States government can just come in and build a port because Israel said they could, nobody asked the Gaza people. I mean, it's such an obvious ploy, and they know it. They control every aspect of the water and the electricity and the telecommunications, and they pretend and lie to people on Twitter. Nobody buys this, and people, it's a static, proven reality. So it says, once again, it is the unarmed civilian population, just like today, the protected persons under international humanitarian law, who is in the eye of the storm. Gaza's civilian population has been victimized in the name of a falsely construed right to self-defense. Oh, weird. Same thing right now. In the midst of an escalation of violence provoked in the face of the entire international community. Everybody sees it. The so-called, there it is, Operation Protective Edge erupted during an ongoing armed conflict in the context of a prolonged belligerent occupation that commenced in 1967. And that's where the argument that the belligerent occupier comes into play. But the point is that they are not protecting the civilian population, so they can't argue that side of the argument. So in every way you look at it, they are illegally committing ethnic cleansing, genocide, but also illegally occupying. Because the context is that you can be occupying during an engagement. The point is you're supposed to then pull back from that occupation and allow people to return to their lands. That, ladies and gentlemen, is UNRWA. That is the right to return. It has nothing to do with removing Israel from existence, which I just saw Ilan Levy share today, because they're still trying to pretend that UNRWA is a terrorist organization. It means that they've always known that they have the legal right to go back to what they removed them from. Israel has just never done that and instead gone even further and taken more of the West Bank, even though everybody, including the U.S., says it's against the law. It just keeps going. You see how infuriating this is? That it's like they know we know, but they laugh about it because they keep doing it. And no one stops them. It's embarrassing. It says, in the course of this ongoing conflict, thousands of Palestinians have been killed and injured in the Gaza Strip during recurrent and ostensible ceasefire periods since 2005. So you hearing that, Ilan Levy and the rest of them? What? So there was a supposedly a ceasefire set. Well, guess what? You have violated that repeatedly ever since. But suddenly 10-7 broke the ceasefire. It's just insulting. They're lying. They're lying. The Israeli government is lying about every single aspect of this. And it says after Israel's unilateral disengagement from the Gaza Strip, the deaths caused by Israel's provocative actions in the Gaza Strip prior to the latest escalation of hostilities must not be ignored as well. So even before this, even before 2014, it was also happening. But anybody paying attention already knows this. According to UN sources, over the last 2 weeks, nearly 800 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed and more than 4,000 injured, of whom the vast majority were civilians. Same situation today. Several independent sources indicate that only 15% of the casualties were combatants. You see, the difference there is they weren't being pushed to make some kind of an argument. They weren't going, well, human shields. Those things came out, but there was not some like whole of international community focus where they were trying to pretend like what they were doing. They just murder people. They bombed entire buildings. They had to occasionally highlight one thing or the other, but it was not like it's happening today. So what's important is to look at the arguments from before and put the lens over what's happening now, and you'll recognize there's nothing different. It's the same stuff they've always been doing. They're just going a lot harder right now. Entire families have been murdered. This is coming from the United Nations all the way back then. And don't forget, it's not new. This is from October 20th. Remember we talked about this? Amnesty International broke this story down. This was done between the 7th and 12th of October, just in the first few days. After October 7th, they did an investigation and found damning evidence of war crimes as Israeli attacks wiped out entire families in Gaza. Where was the international community? Where was Biden? Nobody cared. It's one of the leading human rights group. And the point was they found, I mean, read it for yourself, in these five different examples, they found each case that Israel didn't take any actions to protect civilians, didn't take any actions to spare civilians with notifications ahead of time, and in many cases, just directly bombed civilians. Yeah, but, you know, facts don't matter in this, apparently. Because the point is, you can read it. There's provable evidence. They did their own investigation. It's pretty undeniable, which not you all here seem to know that already. Entire families have been murdered. Well, same thing's happening today. Hospitals, clinics, as well as a rehabilitation center for disabled persons has been targeted and severely damaged. So that's my point from right there. So they weren't. This wasn't some big media push where Hagari came out and said, this was a Hamas headquarter. They just bombed them. Nobody was really pushing them. And I mean, it happened in some cases, but more what you're seeing today was not the same thing. So they've been doing this and getting away with it for a very long time. During one single day on Sunday, the 20th of July, more than 100 Palestinian civilians were killed in one residential neighborhood. This was one of the bloodiest and most aggressive operations ever conducted by Israel in the Gaza Strip, except for today. Now, this is written before that, a form of urban violence constituting a total disrespect for civilian innocence. Same thing now. Sadly, this was followed only a couple of days later by an equally destructive attack on, guess what, the east of Khan Yunis. Additionally, the offensive has already caused widespread destruction of buildings and infrastructure. This is at the time. Over 3,300 houses have been targeted, resulting in their destructions of severe damage. As denounced by the UN fact-finding mission on the Gaza conflict in the aftermath of Operation Cast Lead, which was 2008-2009, so one before this one, this is the 2014 we're discussing, while the Israeli government has sought to portray, this is a quote, while the Israeli government has sought to portray its operations as essentially a response to rocket attacks in the exercise of its right to self-defense, the mission considers the plan to have been directed, at least in part, at a different target, the people of Gaza as a whole. How is it possible that that can be expressed by the leading entities in the international community, the very group put to the task of finding out what's going on, and yet we can't wrap this into the conversation today? That, yeah, they have been targeting all of Gaza. That's always been the plan. We act like we just start fresh. You know why? Because the party paradigm, because the media and the controlled ecosystem, and they just reset the button and we start over today. Let's start an ethnic cleansing. No, it's not. We've never done that. Here's the history we're going to sell you on. And the media acts like they're grappling with understanding it. It's right there. If they actually cared, it's always been in front of us. And it's not just because this one document. It's because you can find 45 of these documents about the same time frame. Every single one we talk about, nobody cares in the controlled situation. It says the same can be said for the current Israeli offensive. And that wasn't even the one we're talking about now. You can read a hell of a lot more if you want to. So let's start with at least one angle of the propaganda, but just really, really basic to get you. You know, I just want to show you some of these arguments coming from the idea that this didn't start then. Remember, this is Francesco saying, you know, that it did not start on 10/7. This is obvious, stark reminder, what I just read you. So, of course, he can't let that sit. Right. So the same day he responds to her and says, you're right. Islamic fundamentalist violence against Jews didn't start on 10/7. The atrocities were eerily reminiscent of the 1929 Hebron massacre. And it's interesting because this is talking about another situation where the story goes that these people, Jewish victims, were burned and raped and the whole story. But there's a lot of counter discussion about that. That's not even the point we're going to get into today. The point is, if you're going to try to pretend like here's a bad thing that happened, and that's the only one that matters, like, it's impossible not to recognize the kind of gaslighting, sidestepping that he's doing right there. She is not even talking about, here's a thing that happened to Palestinians. She's simply highlighting the fact that this didn't start on 10/7. The reality is that this has been an ongoing reality for them for a very long time. Not, here's one event that happened before, therefore it didn't start then. But his response simply shows it's the same thing that's been happening since the very beginning. The invasion happened, right? The Hamas action. And we said, oh my gosh, that's horrible. What's going on? Civilians were hurt. And as it developed, we started to see, oh, well, there's a lot of lies happening too. It looks like Israel made this up. And okay, the point is then day one, day two, day three, day 15, a month, genocide, obvious genocide. And we started going, holy, look at what's going on over there. And every single one of them started going, how dare you look back over here at 10/7. And they're still doing that. But it was so aggressive and so insulting because we were simply going, everyone needs to stop. And he goes, no, only they do. It was like this disjointed push back to only looking at one side. So this is the same thing. And my point is, and here's what Rich People Weekly said, to pretend like this history is only about the idea that Islamic fundamentalists were only going after Jews. This is a reimagining of history. Yes, there's people that are extreme in any kind of situation, but the history is quite obvious. The idea that they're pretending this was Arabs chasing down Jews and they made Palestine what it is today, it's such a damn lie. And any actual historian will tell you that they were living in peace before the Zionist agenda. That's the obvious reality, but thank God it's finally starting to break through. It is the Zionist element that has created the illusion of what they want to create to justify their presence. That's not to say that there weren't people that were being attacked that were Jewish, but it's, in my opinion, you could highlight an endless amount of examples of people that have been oppressed. Different groups, Black people, Jewish people, it's constant over history. To try to pretend like only Jewish people have a lock on some kind of victimhood and therefore nobody else will matter when the conversation is around the Zionist agenda that they frame as only Jewish people is just insulting to anybody else that's ever had any kind of situation where they have been oppressed. But that's what they're doing right here. You're not allowed to care. Palestinians have been oppressed and raped and murdered and robbed and under an apartheid brutal regime for 75 years. Only this one thing matters. Now, Rich People Weekly said, this is quoting Asher Ginsburg, on illegal settlers in the year 1900. They deal with the Arabs with hostility and cruelty, trespass unjustly, beat them shamefully for no sufficient reason, and then boast about their actions. There is no one to stop the flood and put an end to this despicable and dangerous tendency. That's 1900, right? So well before the establishment of the illegal state of Israel. So what are we talking about? This is the situation. I mean, it's only one example. But the point is to realize that there was an element of, and again, the Zionist agenda was around then. State of Israel hasn't happened yet, but Herzl, and even going back to the origin, they were Christian Zionists, which I don't believe is actually the idea that they believed in Christianity. I think they were just flirting with what religion to manipulate. Either way, you can see that they were present then, and you can see their history was already starting to be violent. And this is why the Ergun and Eat Lehigh discussions, or actually, excuse me, Zach Foster corrected me. I think it was, I'm not going to be able to pronounce it correctly. He had a specific pronunciation that I didn't say right. But this, they were the ones attacking the British, attacking Palestinians with terrorist acts, attacking Jews in Iraq, blaming it on Arabs to get them to move into the area. This is all provable history. We'll go over some of that. But let me show you what some of the people said, some of the community. You guys can take it for what you will. I find it interesting the responses he got into this. Here's another one. To the same response, somebody says, Elon, respectfully, your Eastern European Zionist brethren invited Arab aggression in the 1920s. They arrived as immigrants and immediately demonstrated and rallied for a Jewish state. They've been on the land for all of 2 minutes. The British concluded as such in their commissions. I'm sorry, but this is crying wolf. Now, I don't know if I think the timing is exactly correct. These are just people's statements. But what I found interesting was the idea of the British, which is true. The idea that they very, in my opinion, they gave them the state of the rights to the, or the illegal, you know, the, no one can give you the rights to somebody else's state. But the point is that they let them do that on Palestine because they were acting and violently bombing British. I don't think I downloaded the video. I'll play you a video in a second. It was even Associated Press reporting about, or at least they replayed it, reporting about bombing of British soldiers, Zionists. And that's why they ultimately gave in. And that's why I think their identity has always become terrorism generates results. Here is another response. This one is just a video. I'm not familiar with the account, but this video you can listen to. They're just kind of talking about this. I've seen these guys talk before. I'm not familiar with the podcast. But they just say, learn history. When the Christians killed all the Jews in Jerusalem and expelled them from Jerusalem, the second successor of Islam, Omar ibn al-Khattab, settled the Jews in Jerusalem. He protected them. So you're a liar, Elon. No one in history has treated you as well as Muslims. And there's an interesting part of history that does go over the reality of how they were welcomed. And until the Zionist element came into play, that was not what we're seeing today. This person simply highlights, and I can't actually verify this specific graph, but this is accurate. And here's a one from Beth Selim that you can look at. But this just makes the point. Goebbels won't explain the peace, the ceasefire before October 7th. Basically just telling you that this lie is a lie. And you look at the data on this kind of graph, which here's the one I can actually verify from Beth Selim. It's overwhelming. And 2014 was what we were just talking about. That graph there is the amount of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. The lighter one are minors. The purple or not. Did this look like it started? And it for some reason goes the other direction. So up here is 2023, right there. So look at that. Look at all this back here, 2000, 2009. Yeah, sure started on October 7th, didn't it? Here's some, this was the clip. Let me grab this for you. I forgot to download this. Now this is a clip, what I just described. Excuse me, got the hiccups all of a sudden. I was describing where it's an old-timey kind of clip, and you'll hear by the voice. You know, I was going to try to emulate it. Old-timey, like that. Back in this time when they were being attacked. And the point is they're going over when they were attacking British soldiers, which is pretty widespread. Now, here's the clip for you. And I have played this before.
Decent people must have been horrified by the murder by Jewish terrorists of the two British sergeants, Mervyn Pace and Clifford Martin. Their funeral took place at the Ramleh Cemetery with full military honors. The two sergeants, kidnapped as hostages, were hanged as a reprisal, the sort of cruelty once commonly indulged in by the Nazis. Until the appalling situation in Palestine is cleared up, unspeakable outrages may well continue.
See? And that's exactly what we're talking about. That's what was going on in Palestine. That was being reported publicly, right? The fact that the Zionist terrorist gangs were murdering Palestinians and British people, or British you know, military, armed members of the military. And that's, they just said this also happened then only, to make it a joke. So here's another quote. This one's Tom Segev. I guess it's the title of the book is A State at Any Cost, The Life of David Ben-Gurion, excuse me. Traveling through Palestine, it says at the end of the 1880s, Ahed Aham wrote, quote, "They behave toward the Arabs with hostility and cruelty, commit unwanted trespass, beat them shamefully without any good reason, and brag about doing so. In another article, he wrote that the Jewish farmers treated the Arab tenants just as they treated their farm animals. It says, quote, they do not think of the Felihen peasants as human. That's from an Israeli resident. Or excuse me, it says Israeli, you know, person. So at this time, it would have been just a Zionist. And it says the resident of Jaffa. They wrote. I'm just misunderstanding what they wrote. Israel Rokach was the guy's name. So this is well before the illegal state of Israel. Now, all of this is stuff you can easily look up. Here's another one. This is Free Speech Highway pointing out, we know when it began. Levy thinks he is smart, but his mom should have taught him better. Quite frankly, I really don't think this person is even remotely that smart. I think he tries to pretend he is, and they love to, you know, the British accent they love to pretend makes people smart. It really doesn't. The guy is pretty bad at this. But here's a Zionist picture. It's a picture of Zionist quotes. It says, the Zionist Project. And this is Moshe Sharet, the second prime minister of Israel, saying, we have come to conquer a country from people inhabiting it. 1914. This is David Ben-Gurion saying, we must expel Arabs and take their place. It's just a complete revisionist model of history. Now, one thing I want to include before we go on to some of the more propagandized things, Rami Ayara points out, and this is important to realize, that with how insulting it is that the U.S. government tries to pretend that they really want to cause, like they want a ceasefire while constantly vetoing a ceasefire, is that they are actively dragging their feet to make it seem like nothing's happening. Like the UN is right now trying to get a Security Council measure passed because that's what the ICJ is saying. Like, look, we did our job. It is on the UN to now actually pass something to cause to take action. The point is that Israel won't care what the UN says either, because the UN is Hamas, right? Oh, unless one lady they hired says something through the UN that they like and they go, yeah, that's what the right thing is. Even though we're going to make a point about that in the next show. We already broke it down completely. The rape allegation story, it's unreal how obvious that is. She concluded there is no investigation, that they didn't actually, what they did is hand her all the same information that had no evidence. Norman Finkelstein even tweeted about it and simply said, think about this. Not a single person has said they were raped. None of the evidence points to anything other than circumstantial evidence that you can't verify. And it's crazy. And yet that's reasonable grounds to assume that. It's just crazy. But we're going to go over that in the next show. But the point was just, you know, how embarrassing it is to pretend like the UN is completely compromised. And then one person, oh, but that we like right there. That one's good. But the point here is that this is the United States government acting like they're trying to accomplish something, but making sure it doesn't happen. Saying the UN Security Council, U.S. mission to the UN account, circulated this aspect of the draft resolution on Gaza to their Security Council members. It still expresses support for efforts, this is like a revised version. Oh, I think that's revision four. For support the efforts to conclude and implement an agreement for, guess what? A 6-week ceasefire, which literally nobody wants except Israel. It's not a ceasefire. It is an illusion. It does not make sense from any aspect at all, other than guaranteeing the maintaining of the only thing everybody in the world wants to stop, which is the ongoing genocide. It says, despite the overwhelming majority of council members wanting it to demand a lasting ceasefire. Because realize, even the 6 week is part of that is not all. Like, that's actually what they, Israel's side, pushed it back to. Not a complete hostage exchange. Only some. I am completely convinced that some level of their government does not want these people home. And quite frankly, so too are their families. They're screaming that. Now, it says watered down language on potential Israeli assault on Rafah, unchanged since the last version. So it's a weak argument that basically if they write out some ridiculous plan they could pretend is legitimate, then they could do what they want. And OP, it says that number 22 on here now merely condemns the Houthi attacks on the Red Sea, which, by the way, is still not good enough, because what they're trying to do is make something in here that justifies action against Yemen. But what she says, it's better than giving them some kind of an argument that they gives them the right to defend themselves against these attacks, which would just create the war, which, by the way, they're already allowed to defend themselves. But it says one diplomat describes U.S. as stalling because they haven't included changes that the majority want, which is exactly what everyone knows. Everyone knows that. They do not want this to happen. But they want people to think that they do. Now, I just wanted to include that for you, by the way, just so you see where this is at. The Rafah, as far as I can tell, the ground action in Rafah hasn't happened, but it's such an illusion right there because they're bombing Rafah anyway. They keep bombing Rafah. So what's the difference, guys? Yes, it'll be more catastrophic, but you're still bombing a bunch of innocent people standing in an area that you put them in. Like, it's just so incredible how obvious this all is. But as well as that, the deal that's supposed to be happening, which we'll go in again later, is not happening. So they're just lying because Israel does not want it to happen. Now, this is to go is, excuse me, the idea that they act like, I mean, not even act like, it's so on the surface that in their minds, only Israeli people matter. In this situation, whether American, whether, and that's obvious, guys, because if you, right now, there are plenty of examples of Palestinians being killed or people that are Palestinian Americans being killed in Gaza or Palestine. I mean, how about just the fact that there's plenty more in Israel that are not being represented? We've made this point all the time when they speak up and talk about only Jews. I'm like, well, there's plenty more than just Jews in Israel. That don't you only care? Well, clearly you do. That's racism. But my point in this is to show you how everyone's standing up and screaming about one person who was killed. Again, based on the arguments we were told, I'll tell you my thoughts on what I think actually happened, which is that I think this person was killed by the actions that were taken at mass of the innocent people, both Hamas and Israeli citizens alike, when they were being taken. Because the argument is this person was killed and then taken back his dead body, which that doesn't make sense. From any aspect of this, it does not appear that they would even risk. Why would they risk taking a dead body? The point was they were clearly taking hostages for this very clear purpose, and so too have shown when they released them, that they haven't been hurting them, they've been feeding them. There's no evidence other than what Israel states that shows you that this was anything other than kidnapping people for them getting their hostages back. But either way, they're claiming that that's what happened. And so now that they killed him on the October 7th, but we only just told you because they have his body. Like, it doesn't line up for me. They would have been parading that around the entire time. Either way. Assad points out, how nice. There's over 8,000 Palestinian hostages kidnapped by Israel long before October 7th that no official in D.C. would dare meet with their families. So this person is meeting with the family. They met with everybody from Washington, President Biden, and so on. Elon Levy says, October 7th hostage crisis update. Hostage Itay Chen, 19 years old, has been confirmed as killed, which is sad. Anybody being killed is sad. I think that's we should all have some humanity with Hamas holding onto his body in Gaza. Now, why would that make sense? How much you want to bet this turns out that Hamas says they don't have his body and they use that as a sticking point for pretending like they refuse to return his body? I'm willing to bet you, in my opinion, based on all the evidence that I can see, this person was killed on October 7th, probably because of the Hellfire missiles or tank firing or open shooting that happened all over the areas that innocent people are being killed that were Israelis by the IDF. Which, if you still think that didn't happen, it's a special kind of willful ignorance, seeing as how it's coming from Israeli hostages, Israeli security members, Israeli tank drivers, Israeli helicopter pilots, Israeli colonels, all of them telling you what happened, but just pretend it didn't happen. So why does it make sense that they wouldn't tell you this until now? I think there's something fishy with this. And if Elon Levy is talking about it, there's probably pretty clearly something fishy going on. But same thing, here's AIPAC. An American organization, so we're told anyway, our hearts break when another American was killed by Hamas. That's what they're talking about. Well, I said, well, odd how I never saw you post anything about the hundreds of Palestinian Americans being killed in Gaza, seeing as how you are an American group, right? I mean, think about how insulting that is. You know, remember there was, I think, 600 American Palestinians when this started that haven't left because they're all stuck. They're being killed one by one. Does somebody care about that? Does Biden care about that? They don't. Very clearly, they only care about the Israeli Americans. Isn't that disgusting? It should be. It should bother all the people that pretend they're fighting for equality. Well, guess what? There is an American, but they still haven't talked about it. Here is the chairman of the Euromed Human Rights Group highlighting Deborah, an American woman, who was targeted by the Israeli military warplanes in a bombing on her home in Deir al-Balah City. She sends a message to all Americans to support Gaza, stating that the injustice against Gaza must stop. Now, I forgot to do this. I wanted to see exactly where this was. This is, it looks like it's in Gaza Strip. I know it was like maybe West Bank or something. But so here she is, because there's bombings even and attacks happening in the West Bank too. Here is the message from her.
It's okay, take your time. Don't cry, please. It's fine. I'm like, take a breath. Like, okay.
Every time I try to say I'm here, but I have to say it in Arabic because they didn't understand my English.
Oh my God, don't worry. Don't cry, please, okay? Why you didn't travel, like, outside here? Why?
Because if I were to go outside, I would be like a monophic. I really believe that All Muslims need to be treated equally. And you cannot leave the country that you believe that the Palestinians that have a right.
I mean, you know, you get the gist of it in general. I mean, the point is, it's an American, right? Regardless of what you think, like the thing that really bugs me right now, well, always to be quite frank about it. But, you know, I there's people commenting under the clips or under the tweet, you know, like, oh, she looks like a left wing or whatever there, but woke politics. It's like, God, people just grow up, get past all of these ridiculous partisan talking points. Like, of course, sure, maybe that's the case. But what does that have to do with what's happening here? Right. She's a woman who went there, whatever you think she's trying to accomplish, whatever you think that she was naively trying to do, whatever. And she got bombed by her own government's bombs because Israel's murdering people for no reason. That should be the thing you care about, not whether she's a lefty doing something. You know, it's just so crazy how many people fall prey to those things. But the reality is that this was investigated by the chairman of the Euromed Human Rights Group, which I hold in high regard. And the reality being that that's not hard to wrap your mind around. I already told you there were 600 of Palestinian Americans that were there in the beginning of this that are likely still there or dead. But you know, it doesn't matter, right? Because AIPAC is only going to tell you about the Israeli American they claim was killed and likely killed by the IDF when this first started, but we won't talk about that. Well, here is the thing that the AIPAC and them aren't acknowledging. So my same point from before, well, we're pointing out the 75 years that preceded October 7th, and he just goes, no, this one event over here, right? Well, as they're going, here's one Israeli American who died. Oh my God. Well, here is the reality of the entire situation. So it's not the same thing in reverse. It's actually just being, you know, here is the full picture while you're trying to pinpoint it on one thing. Philippe Lazzarini, Commissioner General of UNRWA. Staggering, he says. The number of children reported killed in just over 4 months. Guys, this is crazy. And this actually made it into kind of the breaking news apps. Like this statement, this point actually made it through to some levels of corporate media, which I'm surprised. Which is that, and this should be one of the things that sits with us that is undeniable. It doesn't matter what the narrative is. It doesn't matter if Hamas human shield. It doesn't, even if you think everything they've said is true to a T, how do you make sense of this? The number of children reported killed in just over 4 months in Gaza is higher than the number of children killed in 4 years of wars around the world combined. The number of children reported killed in just over 4 months in Gaza is higher than the number of children killed in 4 years of wars around the world combined. This war is a war on children. It is a war on their childhood and their future. Ceasefire now for the sake of children in Gaza. That is unparalleled. That makes me sick. Now, actually, what I'm going to do real quick, see if I can grab it. No, maybe not. Let me do this instead, and I'll come back to it. I'm going to make a point about numbers. I'll grab this real quick. Just the same point as, you know, the one thing with the reported. So it's a lie because Hamas numbers and the same thing you're going to hear every time. Here's just the Lancet report that shows you no evidence of inflated mortality reporting from Gaza Ministry. But I've already gone over this, and I'll show you the link in a minute. Well, you know what? Actually, hold on. I just don't want to mess up my window here. It frustrates me when this gets... Here, this is the one. This is the tweet. And the link itself. Actually, I'll just do this and I'll come back to it. This is an Israeli platform. The army checked and found that the reports of the dead in the Ministry of Health Gaza are reliable. You know, this I've been saying it for a while now. Here's I wonder if you guys can see that on the screen. Oh, you still can. Good. You know, this is Vice News. Israeli intelligence has deemed Hamas-run health ministry's death toll figures generally accurate. I mean, it's just when you're lying about everything, you lie about everything. I mean, it's pretty insulting. The point is just that at every angle, something is being misrepresented. And that's one of the big ones because they have admitted that they're using Gaza numbers in their reports, in their internal reports for the military. And yet we still have people like Elon Levy and the rest pretending like it's still false, right? It's still fake news. Where was I? Because, and I'll get to that when we get to that point, but I just want to make sure you saw that those numbers are accurate, even according to the Israeli military, and that's more children killed in 4 years of wars around the world combined in just 4 months. There's no way you can pretend that makes sense. Here's UNRWA saying the situation in Gaza is catastrophic and deteriorates by the minute. The United Nations reports that 25 people in northern Gaza have died of malnutrition and dehydration. 21 of them were children. 25. In northern Gaza, because no one's even talking. They won't even, the trucks won't even get there, let alone even get through it all. But if they do, it's in the south. Nothing goes there. These people I can almost guarantee it's more than that. This is what they can confirm. And the OCHA is the, that's the wrong. That's what I was thinking. I was like, that's not the right number. That's something they tagged it incorrectly. But that's just the United Nations. I forget the name of the full one. The point is this is horrendous. The point is we're watching children die more than ever. And right now they're literally starving to death. And we still pretend like we're debating all of this. Now, somebody sent me this image. Apparently this was just recently, either yesterday or today, where they went out in front of the White House. And for those in the podcast, it's that sad image of Ahmed, I believe. And the fact that he was one of the children that died, starved to death live on TV in front of everybody. It says, Genocide Joe, how many kids have you starved to death? And don't forget, the image on the right was used by one of those Israeli Telegram channels, and they were all laughing about how they called it ET2. They loved it. They're laughing about it. They were laughing emojis everywhere, and they were sharing. I showed it just recently. That's the kind of humanity we're dealing with. Let's not forget as well, since we're in the week of Ramadan, it says, how Israel forces treated Muslims in Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan last year. Don't forget. This look familiar to anybody? It should. That's how they're treating every Palestinian all the time right now, claiming they're all Hamas. Same thing. Same thing inside of the Al-Aqsa Mosque for no reason. Same thing last time while they were praying. And this happens every single year, even outside of Ramadan. And by the way, we're talking on A.M. Wakeham this morning about an interesting thing in regard to the prophecy we've noted on a few times. The idea of the Temple Mount, the third temple conversation, right? The prophecy that's supposed to be destroyed. And then the third temple for the, of a synagogue will be built there. And it's supposed to signify some new part of, basically in my most I hear from it, it's like the idea that that's when the greater Israel and the whole thing will change. We'll take back what's ours. It's like exactly what they pretend you, Russia and Hamas will do. Take over the rest of the world once they finish this situation. Bottom line is it is interesting that one, I just saw a clip of an American soldier in Israel wearing multiple patches showing that prophecy. Then on this morning, it was Chris talking about the idea that they, I wasn't, if he hadn't shown me this, I would have thought it was probably fake, but I of course always look into it. Never dismiss anything without looking further, but they were claiming that they had engineered specific red calves, which are part of this prophecy discussion. And that's real. Apparently they've literally engineered these. The guy was talking about it. Even the corporate media was interviewing. He's like, is he being serious? Like, and they even have a spot where they're going to sacrifice it. I mean, this is crazy. We're in civilized society and we're talking about animal sacrifice. Yeah, guys, that's real. And that is really believed by a lot of these Zionist maniacs. And I'm talking about the people that have been manipulated by the Zionist leadership that have believed that, like, that's the extremist religious side of this all. Now, talking about the flower aid discussion, I just discussed this recently. Here's the show that I kind of concluded it was a setup and a false flag. Plenty of information there, but I wanted to include for you so you didn't miss it. Cuts News reported, and I'll show you some others you can follow up on. This was today, so there's going to be more information coming out, but this is like breaking cutting news right now. The government media office says that Israel's military again targeted hungry civilians who are waiting for aid at the Al-Kuwait. I think that's the one I said in the beginning, didn't I? I believe so. Al-Kuwaiti roundabout. Third time that's happened there. This morning killed and wounded many of them. The casualties of Israel's targeting of hungry people while waiting for aid has reached over 400 victims, with over 1,300 injured. It's like its own little new mini Gaza genocide. Like, it's just this, it's just crazy. And that number is probably going to go up in its own right. Israel's practices, quote, confirm that the policy of starvation is currently a hallmark of Israel's plan, alongside its perpetuation of acts of genocide and ethnic cleansing. It says, quote, what encourages Israel to proceed with this crime is the international community's compliance with its dictates and its lack of seriousness in ending our people's suffering by implementing a ceasefire and ensuring the sufficient flow of aid. 100%. It doesn't matter what truth, what you think is the truth. That is obvious. They're allowing this to continue. There's simply no question about that. Now, I was considering going through a quick thing about the aid. Let me see if I'll... Yeah, I just want to point this out really quickly, and I'm not going to go into too deep. But what we're talking about here is the idea that they're starving people, like 100% engineering this. This is the image I used today, which just broke my heart. I mean, I had a moment with this image. 38 injuries arrive at Al-Shifa Hospital after Israeli forces open fire at hungry civilians, citizens, who were sitting and waiting for aid at Al-Quwaiti roundabout. This is one of the people right there. Palestine and MENA Info Center break down some of the information as they're reporting. The government office says Israel's occupation army insists on targeting those seeking to provide for their families and exacerbating the policy of starving our people. Once again, the Israeli occupation army targeted Palestinians at the Al-Quwaiti roundabout this morning, resulting in the murder of several and injuring others. The new crime raises the number of victims killed by Israel while awaiting aid at specifically the Al-Quwaiti roundabout and the Al-Rashid Street, which is the other one, that's the flower massacre, to more than 400 victims. Israelis' targeting of civilians awaiting aid exposes the falsity of any talk about attempts to alleviate the suffering in the northern Gaza Strip and confirms that the policy of starvation is currently a hallmark of the occupation's plan, alongside its perpetuation of acts of genocide. And I was just going to include this just so, you know, just Israeli minister Ben-Gvir expresses support publicly for an Israeli sniper who shot a 13-year-old Palestinian child at a refugee camp. You know why? You'll know why, because he said it publicly. He said, quote, "I salute the fighter who neutralized the terrorist attempting to shoot fireworks at him and our forces." Yeah, that's the terrorist who shot fireworks, right? That's the reality. You throw a rock, you get shot in the head because you're a terrorist. You think that makes sense? Anybody pretending like that makes sense? Ben Shapiro and the rest of you, you're disgusting. And people see you for what you are now. That's crazy to me. It's acceptable because we're in time of war and Hamas and Human Shields, whatever they dump over the story. It's not acceptable. You shot a child because he had fireworks. That's what happened. Now, I want to quickly look at this. I just want to go over some of these images that I've shown you. And I'm going to try to remember to include these because I forgot. Let's see. Here we go. I don't have these in the links. This one. I just broke down another one of these little threads today that I included a bunch of stuff. And I just simply pointed this out because I felt like people need to hear this. I said, I'm not sure if there is anyone other than rabid Zionists out there refusing to admit that multiple members of Israel's government have openly admitted the Israeli hostages are, quote, not the most important thing. But it's very obvious. They know their genocide is killing them too. That's the important thing to remember. This is directly from Smotrich. Says bringing home the hostages is, quote, not the most important thing. We just talked about this. And the links are all down here. You can read them for yourselves. Times of Israel. This one's an Israeli platform. Saying the same exact thing. Oh, and actually, this one was the quote. This one's right here. Oh, that was the other image. This is from ABC. Remember, I showed you this one as well. This is from October 19th. This is what they've always been saying. Hostages and civilian casualties will be secondary to destroying Hamas. That was the economy minister. He said, even if it takes a year, they just lie now because their own people got mad at them, thinking they would blindly support the killing of their own people. It says, the bottom line is first and last priority is destroying Hamas. That's what they're saying openly if you listen. Here's PBS. It can either try to annihilate Hamas, which would almost certainly mean death for the estimated 100 hostages still held in Gaza. This was written a few days ago. Or it can cut a deal and allow them to come home. Yeah, that's the reality for anyone with a brain. You can't pretend like continuing bombing where they're being held somehow doesn't put them at risk. You can either take the deal and bring them home like you pretend you want, or you can keep trying to pretend you're fighting Hamas. Only choices, but not, though you can't do both. And this is Maria Sunzine, I forget. This is the senior analyst with 972 Magazine, saying representatives and families of the hostages who just met with Netanyahu say they demanded of him that he agree to Hamas's terms, to everyone for everyone. She also reports for Washington Post and in Foreign Policy. The point is, that's the reality that I've showed you as well. It's publicly clear that they want their families home. This one, as she writes, a scathing report in the independent Israeli site exposes that 10 hostages were killed by Israeli airstrikes. You could read it for yourself. It's in Israeli media. All this stuff proves to us, guys, that they don't want this deal. They don't want the hostages home. And in fact, that they're actually trying to kill them. Here was the Guardian. We're constantly in terror. Israeli hostage tells of captivity in Gaza. And what she's talking about is the bombings of the IDF bombings that she was afraid of. And in the article, she says that the Hamas members literally shielded her from the bombings. It's just on and on and on. And I'll also include CNN literally telling you that their own documents and satellite imagery showed that they did fire on the food convoy. Shouldn't be that hard to see. Here's Human Rights Watch going from October all the way to February. Israel blocking aid to still blocking aid to civilians in Gaza. Israel's blocking aid October 30th. Israel's blocking aid, still a weapon of war, December 18th. This one goes to February 26th. Defies court, starves Gaza. Israel continuing to block aid. It just goes on and on and on. The ghost list that CNN discussed, proving that they're arbitrarily keeping things off the list. Aid dropping out of the sky without the parachutes and killing a couple of Palestinians. No big deal. Here is the one I showed you the day where they're discussing how they're basically treating this like a Hunger Games, that the aid is creating the dynamic where they attack each other. It is creating a situation that is not helping them. Here's the idea that showing you they were bombing where the aid was dropping, which tells me they're coordinating this to maximize the suffering. Here is the part where the Pentagon has literally been asked, are you going to seek assurances from them that they won't fire on the aid convoys? And he goes, I'm not going to speak for Israel. Seriously? They do not give an S, guys. Here is the Joseph Borrell saying that they're continuing to block the aid, and until they do, it won't come through. I mean, it's very clear. Here is the point that is showing you that this is all breaking down in front of them. This is J Street, for crying out loud. J Street. It says hundreds of former Israeli security officials and diplomats, including former heads of the IDF and Mossad, have blasted the, quote, damage to Israel's security and strategic interests, as Biden put it, done by the Netanyahu government's deliberate restriction of humanitarian aid to civilians in Gaza. Guys, that is a Jewish platform. That is literally a group that is highlighting the fact that they're blocking aid while the Jewish state and the representatives pretend that they're not blocking aid. The point is, it's a Zionist state, and the reality is that this is an organization that will almost in any other circumstance blindly support what they're saying. What they're coming out and telling you is they're blocking aid. We shouldn't need to see that any harder, but the point is that Elon Levy, Eli David, and State of Israel, and Ivanfas Klompas, and Hen Mazig, and all these propagandists are just blindly telling you otherwise. And I agree with what Assad said here. J Street doesn't give a damn about the slaughter of Palestinians and the destruction of Gaza. It is merely worried about the damage to Israel's security and strategic interests. That's it. The genocide lobby has two branches, AIPAC and J Street. I completely agree with that. The point is, they're recognizing a loss and trying to get ahead and saying Netanyahu's the problem, just like Clinton already said. They're trying to move. They know they lost this already. Some people do anyway. Now, here's a report that I'll come back to later. It's two minutes, 20 seconds, where they're telling them, like, reporter pushes on why the U.S. won't use its leverage to get aid into Gaza. Matt Miller just continues to lie as the meek coward that he is. Here is another one from Zon Zine saying the Israeli narrative is that Hamas is not interested in a deal that has stopped negotiations. This is from yesterday, by the way. She goes, that's incorrect. As I've been telling you, Israel may find it unacceptable, but their position has remained consistent. Full stop to war, withdrawal of IDF, return to displaced northern Gaza, and the full hostage exchange. That's the reality. And then Netanyahu is the only one that wants this temporary small thing, and everyone else pushes back, and then he goes, Hamas refused. No, that's not what's happening. And interestingly enough, Khaleesi points out, and this is actually a perfect point, and I'm going to go into the port in another show, but she says, Israel and the U.S. lift the blockade on Gaza. Hooray! Oh, wait, but not for aid. The irony, the blockade can't be lifted to bring in actual humanitarian aid, or Israel won't let it, but these vehicles transported machinery into Gaza to build the American pier that's supposed to bring humanitarian aid. Think about how stupid that is. What an excellent point. The idea being that why don't just drive the trucks in then? I mean, my God, it's so obvious that the U.S. is playing a role in maintaining this. My point the same. If you're going to pretend that Gaza's in control, why is Israel the one facilitating the building of an illegal port on Gazan area? Because you're occupying everything. That's why. And on top of that, her point is so obvious. You remove the supposed siege to bring through machinery to build an illegal port, but the aid is waiting. But the aid's going to come through the port once you're done with that in 2 months. Obviously, you could have brought in aid trucks countlessly between then and now, but they're not. They're starving them. And the U.S. government is completely okay with that. I think it's because they're using this to justify the building of a port that's probably going to help them mine, or whatever the right word is, drill oil from the water, I bet. That's my opinion. But also just to gain something and gain access, gain a foothold at the expense of Gaza while pretending they're doing it for them. Again, as always, the worst of the worst is what that is. Now I'm going to go over the port discussion in another show. It's worth looking into, by the way, the port discussion. I mean, it's what they're doing is it's ridiculous. And the main points I'll just give you while I'm grabbing this new screen share is that they're already telling you it's going to be multiple. Like, I think it was like 1,000. Well, I don't want to give the wrong number, but a hell of a lot of U.S. ships, military personnel. Yeah, for human aid, though. And then the best part, they're telling you they're going to do this to get aid through, right? And why is aid being stopped, as I just showed you, from even Israeli counterpart? Because Israel's blocking it. But guess what? Israel's going to be involved in checking through the port. So it's not going away. They just expended the problem at their to their benefit. Surprise, surprise. Now let's talk about some let's get into the real propaganda side of this. Well, actually, let me close some stuff real quick. So we're going to talk about propaganda in a very specific way. This has to do with not just lying, like I was saying before, right? Not just saying something that's completely untrue, but getting into the discussion of propaganda that is manufacturing entire like actions. Like, I mean, you get like borderline false flag kind of stuff. Now here, this is just starting off on just the lies. I want to rehash like just some of these things. Here goes. This was 17 hours ago. Just another example of how Hamas front, UNRWA, spreads misinformation to mischaracterize Israel's humanitarian aid policy and lobbies for war. Well, I literally just showed you J Street and others telling you they're blocking aid. Everyone knows that. So he's lying about it, just in case that wasn't clear. And so I'm going to go through all this to show you here is a literal Israeli government spokesman for October 7th, which is so ridiculous. Is there a 9/11 spokesman for the United States? Like, that's a really stupid and very obvious propaganda role. Here, he's lying to you, obviously, pretending that they're letting aid through everywhere, but citing COGAT of all groups that is an Israeli cutout. It is not what it pretends to be. And well, here, what is it doing? It's citing Philippe Lazzarini, the head of UNRWA, who is saying this, which we can prove. An entire population depends on humanitarian assistance for survival. Very little comes in and restrictions increase, which everybody, corporate media, UN, everybody except Israel is making sure you know that. A truck loaded with aid has just been turned back because it had scissors used in children's medical kits. That's real. Medical scissors are now added to a long list of banned items and Israeli authorities classify for dual use. Think about how insulting that is. Dual use. Well, they're working on all. So, I mean, God, this is so incredible. The list indicates basic and life-saving items from anesthetics, solar lights, oxygen cylinders, and ventilators. To water cleaning tablets, cancer medications, and maternity kits as items that you're not allowed to bring through. And that changes every 30 seconds. CNN even did a breakdown showing you things like gauze being turned back. It says the clearance of humanitarian supplies and the delivery of basic and critical items needs to be facilitated and accelerated. The lives of 2 million people depend on it. But here's what COGAT said. Lying is a sign of desperation, UN. This did not happen. Seems like they're trying to, I swear to God, they're listening to what I say. And I think that they're repeating what, that's so funny. But it says over 16,000 trucks entered Gaza with only 1.5% not permitted. That's a whole, I mean, the bottom line is the idea that they're not doing this is patently false. They're not, it doesn't even matter what kind of numbers they're playing with. They're not letting in even a fraction of what was let in before October 7th, which even then was not meeting their needs, according to everybody. People were already food insecure. Now it's a fraction of what it was before. And that's if it's even coming through at all some days. I think at the last report from even corporate media, UN numbers, human rights groups, 90% of Palestinians right now in Gaza are not able to eat. 90%. Every day they're trying to get, this is not like skipping lunch. They're literally 90% are not finding food in a given day. I mean, that's incredible. 25 children just starved to death, provably. But this is what they're going to say. It says most were re-coordinated and entered later. That's a lie. Your info sources are wrong. You realize, here's what's hilarious. They're the ones saying that UNRWA is the one responsible for why it's not happening when they want to. But then in this case, saying your info sources are wrong. But aren't they the one you're pointing to? So it's their source. He's the information source. He's the one saying we're involved. Just so incredibly... These people are bad at what they do, is the ultimate point. And COGAT is just an extension of the propaganda. It says we are constantly in touch with UN orgs and haven't heard a word about it. The point is, COGAT was already caught lying. We've already talked about this. But just to point out, this is funny, especially Hamas members in an attached list. Remember, there is a list. Oh, you mean a calendar? Yeah, it's a calendar. And Arabic-speaking people prove that. It's hilarious. But we just talked about this. Israel doubles down on Hamas rape, UNRWA, food aid lies. If you want to go deeper on this, like go into a lot of it. But here's what I'm talking about. Here says UNRWA tells Palestinians, hold on, there's something I was going to say here. Oh, it's just out of order. I forget. No, I don't think we have it in this one. But the one, it goes into this overlap. The COGAT was involved with these lies around this time. Remember, there was one just before this where COGAT said they were bringing in food to this very location, but they were already shooting people that were trying to leave. They shot people who tried to get stuff outside. I'll go back to this one. So they're lying. They know they're lying. But here is Elon Levy responding to this. This person says, just listen to Palestinians. This sign at the entrance to a refugee camp near Bethlehem says it all. Why on earth are Palestinians refugees under Palestinian authority? This person has no idea what they're talking about. It says UNRWA is all about serving Palestinians until return. Wait, making sure I'm misunderstanding her. I felt like she was saying, why on earth are Palestinians refugees under Palestinian authority? I'm not sure about that question, but maybe I'm wrong about her sentiment here. Either way, the point is, they're refugees because they've never been allowed to return to where they were removed from. So the point is, until Israel no longer occupies illegally those places, they're not able to return. So I'm not sure, maybe I'm misunderstanding that middle point, because when she says UNRWA is all about serving Palestinians until return, that's true. It says, reminder that October 7th is what, okay, that's, so I'm right. She's ridiculous. She says, reminder, October 7th is what return is. That's not true. In regard to what she's framing it as. October 7th, in regard to the act of legal resistance, yes. That's the way they fight back for that return. That's legally protected under international law. But what you're pretending is atrocity propaganda. The point is, UNRWA services are, on for the podcast, it's a banner that says, UNRWA services are our right until return. And first of all, so you understand it, that's not UNRWA posting that. That's Palestinians saying that. The reality, though, is that's the entire reason they want UNRWA to be removed, because it is the group that has maintained the records of where they lived and where they're supposed to be going back to, you know, under the illusion that this is the legalities will eventually cause Israel to go back to where they were and people go back to their home. That's not happening. That's why they're screaming that this is a terrorist organization that has to be removed, and the two-state solution is it's never going to happen. So all you're seeing there is UNRWA describing exactly what the international community decided it should do from the very beginning. Be an organization that keeps track of what their legal right of return would be. Now that's somehow been spun into some kind of terrorist act because they don't like the idea that they're legally allowed to return. You see how that works? So my point is, this person is just trying to pretend like that's a problem. Why are they still refugees? Because you've never given their land back. But here's what he says. UNRWA tells Palestinians that until they end their forever war against Israel by ending Israel, they have a right to free healthcare at expense of the U.S. taxpayer. See, is that if you think UNRWA would say UNRWA services are our right? No, that's somebody talking about UNRWA services. So again, the guy, I don't even think this guy even knows what due diligence means. But the point is that you're not talking about forever wars. You're not talking about anything other than whatever ends up causing their right to return, which could be Israel acknowledging the law. But of course, you have to make it about horror, terror, atrocity propaganda and leading in and U.S. taxpayers paying for their services. Are you serious? How about $40 billion? How about $3.8 billion a year for money for what you guys don't need in Israel? That is what U.S. taxpayers are paying for. That, what you're looking at for UNRWA, is a fraction of what we're giving to Israel for war. My point is, he doesn't care because he doesn't think you know that. He's playing on the ignorance of Americans to make you think that, oh, we're funding these dangerous Muslims. No, you're funding the dangerous Zionists. That's what's happening. That is going to people that need it because you have maintained them as refugees for 75 years, or depending on what we're talking about, maybe less. It says not even the U.S. taxpayer gets that. You're right. Not in the way you think, though. Talk about perverse incentives to continue a forever war. A forever war? I mean, it's just such a grotesque perversion of reality. They are legally set up to guarantee their right of return that everybody knows is a legal right that you've never allowed, but you spin that into a war on Israel, which is, by the way, what you forced them to do, which is legally protected. So it really doesn't matter how you spin this. You're ridiculous in the way you frame it, but it's just dishonest from its top to down, or top to bottom. So the point of all of this is to show you how many things they continue to lie about on an egregious level. This is the one from before. It makes my blood boil that while our soldiers are putting in their lives at risk, blah, 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 spinning this lie, which it turned out that this was a lie. What he's saying is, how dare you accuse us of bad things while we're delivering it? Nope, you lied about that. This is the Red Crescent and Red Cross as well, showing them that Israel occupation forces claimed to have delivered this oxygen, but they didn't. What they did was beat us up, shoot at our ambulance, steal everything we had, wait a week, and then deliver empty canisters, and then shoot at people when they tried to come out. That is what happened. More than once, by the way. But of course, the other part of it was, which I didn't plan to point out, but I will. I think it's hilarious. It just shows you what they're willing to lie about. He says, lying about this is modern day Jews are poisoning the wells libels. Well, yeah. You mean that real story that Even Haaretz broke down, literally using Israeli army documents? Yeah, that story. Blood libel, huh? Place the materials in the well, Haaretz discusses. Docs point to Israeli army's 1948 biological warfare, poisoning wells in Arab villages. This is the reality. Just like we've talked about with Gideon Levy discussing cement and dead animal bodies in their wells. It's not blood libel. It is a true story that you don't want people to know about, but you know it's real, and you use Jewish people to basically become your verbal human shield, or however you want to frame that. Just like you're using them in settlements to be your literal human shield against whatever. That is what Zionism is. But this is my point. He's lying about everything, like the bread discussion we just showed you. Right? Oh, no, that was the Kogat one. So Kogat was the one sharing this first, lying about this. Actually, let's just leave it with that. Actually, I'll use both. So you can see that it's also Elon Levy. But we've shown you this before. They're literally claiming this is the al-Nusrat bakery. But he's saying 20 operational bakeries. He posted this on February 29th. He's flat out lying. And you know what? He posted a video showing all this bread, pretending they're not starving while they're starving of the death. It's a lie. And it's already been broken down by even Twitter. But you can prove, by the way, that the building they're pointing to, the Nusrat, the entire refugee camp has been destroyed. This February 8th overlay was put on by this guy, Oren Barksi, who lied about it, saying there is no food shortage. And they said this is a very old video. The bakery has been bombed. It was destroyed in October 2023, which there's pictures of it. The entire thing has been destroyed. So here's Kogat saying the same thing. Hey, look at that. A bakery in al-Nusrat. February 23rd. No, you're lying, man. You're lying because it was destroyed in October 23rd. See my point? So Kogat provably lying about food while people are starving to death when their job is about delivery of humanitarian aid. Guys, what kind? That is skin crawling disgusting. Like, that is the kind of horrifying act that these people, again, pretending to starve people while literally ensuring that they starve to death. That's a Zionist act. Here is Israel, the real account, saying market scenes in Nusrat, February 28th. Nusrat, you mean the place that's been completely destroyed? Yes. Here's the parody Israel account saying, excuse the new admin, please. He forgot that we bombed Nusrat refugee camp and the bakery 4 months ago. Here's the bakery. That's destroyed. It's just like that right now, if not completely removed by bulldozers. That's the bakery that Kogat is pretending this is in on February 23rd. Let that sink in. They're all lying about it. Now, here is the push from today. This is the kind of thing, and this one's not just from today. This has been ongoing and really flimsy, but I'm seeing this come out in a really, really aggressive way. This came directly from Israel's main account. It shows a guy, which now there's so many ways to look at this. Who knows whether that guy was doing something else and they caught him in a weird picture? Who knows if he was doing that salute to the person he was calling a Nazi? Who knows if he was... who knows if he's an actual Nazi and why that would then represent everybody else around him? Like, there's so many ridiculous things about this. It's inherently stupid to pretend that that makes sense. And here's what they said. Same ideology, same salute, slightly different slogans. Slightly different slogans? I mean, it's just so crazy why, I mean, I don't know why anybody would think that's logical. It's assumptive. It's conjecture. It's broad stroking. It's like everything we all used to know is ignorance. And here's the state of Israel on the March 10th, just saying that against an American person, by the way. Don't you care, Biden? Don't you care that a foreign government is literally calling your... I mean, think about how wild that is. My point is simply to argue same ideology. So what they're trying to tell you is he is a Nazi. That's what they're saying. Same salute, So pretending that everybody here is actually secretly a Nazi, wink, wink, and that he just got caught doing the salute that they all agree with, and their slogans are a little bit different. I don't know, man. I laughed when I saw that. I said, this is how stupid they think we are. Literally just making things up from the official Twitter account of the state of Israel. They don't even care that most will recognize this as the clear misrepresentation and deception that it is. They just do it anyway. I think that's desperate. Here's an image that somebody sent me. There's so many of these. And this is the same thing. So what do you think is happening here? What do you think is happening? Do you think this is a guy at a Palestinian protest going, yeah, Nazis, and holding up a swastika? Do you think that's what's actually happening? Are you really that? I mean, it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible that this guy's a real Nazi and he just secretly is there. I mean, it's possible he's a Nazi and he went there to protest against Palestinians. It's possible that he's a secret Nazi that is a Palestinian protesting supporter. It's possible that he was holding up that sign because they're protesting people that they're calling Nazis. Yeah, maybe. That's what's happening, guys. That's what you've seen this a lot. Or examples where they're holding up a sign, right, that shows the Israeli thing and it shows a Nazi symbol on it. And they go, look at him supporting Nazis. It's like, are you guys that stupid? Or are you just willing? Like, are you actually think that we're all that stupid? They're clearly suggesting that the state of Israel are Nazis, whatever you think about that. It's just so obvious what these things are. And my point is always is if that's the best you got, if that's what you're seeing roundly everywhere, they don't have anything, which then clearly suggests that this is not true. But here's where it gets even more embarrassing. This is Yoni Lavatan. Excuse me. Not familiar with the account, but it looks like he has words in Times of Israel and mainstream media. These are stickers. I've seen plenty of people post this. It literally says, with a Palestinian flag behind it, rape is resistance. Now, quite frankly, by the way, I don't even think people would make the Palestinian flag with like these faded colors, but you know, it's almost meant to be an insult. But either way, rape is resistance. That's what they said. This is free Palestine by any means necessary. Guys, literally nobody is saying that on the Palestinian side. Because most people on the Palestinian side are the ones acknowledging that there are egregious violations of international law taking place. So the argument is it's a very Zionist argument to say you're violating the law. So here's how we're going to violate the law in response. I will guarantee you there's people that have that opinion. Like I would argue that if there's anything you could possibly imagine, somebody probably out there thinks that. But it's very easy to prove that the vast majority of people protesting for Palestine, that's exactly counter to everything they embody and believe. Or you can go as far as to argue that they all secretly think that, but none of them say it out loud. That's all certainly stupid because that means you haven't proven that. Either way, to pretend they think this is completely baseless because there's zero evidence to back it up. Then all of a sudden, you start finding these stickers. Now, we have a perfect story to go over about stickers that have happened before or about just propaganda in the same way. But it says, this is the movement you support when you call for a ceasefire. The other one says, babies are occupiers too. That's actually what these things say. To argue, first of all, that, I mean, how in the world can you contort ceasefire into rape or killing babies? Do you not understand the definition of ceasefire? I mean, you need to buy a dictionary. I don't think, because they've gotten so drunk on the idea of how they've misrepresented these words. Suddenly Palestine means anti-hating Jews and ceasefire means killing babies. I mean, that's how ridiculous this is. Nobody believes that. So what you end up getting is people that are like, well, that's really stupid. And then a huge portion of the mainstream discussion who are wildly pro-Zionist that just pretend it all makes sense. It's really bad. And it says, chant from river to the sea or want to free Palestine. But then he puts the quotes, by any means necessary. Now, I've seen people saying stuff like that, but you could argue that means they mean anything. And certainly that's what the word says. But I'm pretty sure what they're arguing for is resistance. But either way, it takes a really special kind of stupid or very deceptive mindset to pretend a single sign embodies what everybody thinks. It's the same thing. I just showed you a video of a maniacal Zionist woman who is literally saying, I want all the babies in Gaza to die. I want all the people in Gaza to die, right on video. And of course, I said, here is a good example. But of course, I'm not as ignorant as people like the ADL. I think I was tweeting underneath them doing the same thing to tell you that represents every Zionist. It doesn't. Or every Jew, every Israeli. It doesn't. That's what they sure as hell what they do every chance they get. So here, I said there's a huge new push coming from the Zionist side. Atrocity propaganda in sticker form, a sticker false flag, call it what you will. This, and I put in parentheses, like all hilariously bad Zionist propaganda, is just embarrassing. Literally no one genuinely advocating for Palestine is saying this. Of course, Eviva Klompa steps in and says, I've seen it in New York City. Now, by the way, it's the exact same image. So I'm beginning to think this wasn't even a broad thing. Like, this is like one person with some stickers, and this same image is circulated in all the propagandas. You'll find the same images. The pro-Hamas mob, otherwise meaning the Palestinian protest, that's just how they have to do it because they're desperate, has put rape back on the table. I mean, I just can't. I have to laugh at how stupid that is. Like after everything, let's just pretend like they even actually think that. After everything that's happened, after an entire push from Palestinian supporters highlighting that they're lying about the rape conversation, to then come over and say, never mind, rape is resistance, do it again. Like, it's just so dumb. It actually speaks to the kind of ignorant propaganda we've seen from Zionists, where they just go, what do we pretend they say? Put that out there. Like, you can't just make a sticker that says, like, all Israelis are inhuman, or something that you might pretend people might actually be saying. It's like, that is so far over the top. It's the point that I was saying about the food. Like, you can't say, instead of, no, they're not starving, like, there is drugs coming through, you have to go, no, they're not starving, they're swimming in food. It's like, you have to laugh at how bad that is. It's like they think that's what you would expect. As I said, no one is buying this except the Zionists. They'll buy anything that obfuscates their treasured genocide. Measured propaganda, anyone? Instead of a fake sticker saying all Israelis are occupiers, you go full Zionist and make it absurd and unbelievable. That's good. That's better. All Israelis are occupiers, right? Wouldn't that then clearly in a tactical way suggest that they think all Israelis are targets? See, but they're not very smart. They go to the extreme level because they're trying to shock you, but they think you're stupid and falling for it. I would even argue all Israelis are occupiers would not be an argument for Palestinian supporters. That's my opinion, though. Oh, and this was the same tweet I put out. So here's another one. This was another angle of this, except this one, I think, is real. I think this is a very tired and weak effort to try to jam these two things together. This one says Zionism is terrorism. Well, historically, that's pretty accurate. And quite frankly, I think that's an obvious reality while you're watching them play out in Gaza right now. But she says, Brooklyn, New York. She said, this is the shit. Excuse me. Shit, I forgot. No cussing. This is the shit that Jews deal with. You see, this is everyday nonstop kind of thing that's happening. This is what you need to say to this kind of response. No, that's what Zionists have to deal with, which is why you're yelling about it. Only racists and Zionists make this about Judaism. Hashtag Zionism is anti-Semitism. There's really never a response to that because there's not really much you can try to say. Now, here is the sticker point. All right. So as we're talking about stickers, you might have already seen this. We'd actually briefly talked about this when it was happening. This is a post from November 18th, 2023. Right as this is beginning, oh my God, we have this big push. Can't you tell they love Hamas? They put stickers all over saying they love Hamas. And guess what? It even says UBC Social Justice Center. Of course, because all those woke Democrats, that's all it's about, right? Always playing on your two-party blindness. That's always how that works. Here is a wild pro-Zionist Israel supporter saying, I love Hamas, stickers plastered all over, I think it was a University of British Columbia, by this group, he's claiming, the Social Justice Center. Why? Because the sticker says so. Can't you tell? Quite the due diligence, man. And it says, how can Jewish students ever feel safe on campus when they see student groups expressing love toward a genocidal terrorist, or genocidal, right? Like, it's just early on trying to run from that. Dedicated to the slaughter of Jews worldwide, which is not even the reality, despite the fact that Israel provably funds Hamas. Their own charter says the exact opposite today. And yes, there was an original that says otherwise, but that's clearly when there was a lot of funding coming their way. But the point to me, for me, is why would even I love Hamas be threatening to Jews on campus? Does that say that they practice as, I mean, like, it's just so silly. That's like saying, putting a sticker that says, I love anything counter. Like, if I put a sticker that says, I love ISIS, does that mean I'm going to try to kill Christians in front of me? You know what I mean? Like, I guess certainly you could argue it might, but it's just such a jump to pretend this is an immediate threat. But it's always how this works. But that's a flimsy point in general. I just think that's fair to say. The real point is it was all a lie. All a complete lie that stemmed right back to a Jewish organization. What do you know? Here is Stop Hindu Hate, simply pointing at the same thing, saying, nothing to see here. Just some I Love Hamas stickers distributed in University of British Columbia, Canada. Just another day in Canada, a safe haven for Hamas and Nazis. No, it was a lie. And you fell for it because people like this don't do due diligence. They just share what works for their narratives. But here, Janine posted this on November 22nd, saying, well, for Achi, I'll start with this one. Saying someone is putting up I Love Hamas stickers at UBC and falsely attributing them to the Social Justice Club, or whatever it's called. The people falling for this moronic and obviously fake smear are willing to believe anything about Palestinian supporters. Now, here's what's funny. Read through the comments. It's endless. People that are like, you're an idiot. You're gaslighting. You know that Hamas, this is what Palestinian supporters do, is what they think. And it'd probably be a good exercise to try to trace those accounts back to something and see what they're, find out they're all Zionist bot accounts, probably. Either way, the point is, he called it out early. 18 said, this is fake. And which, by the way, my gut would tell me the same thing. That's dumb. That's like coming out and posting exactly what the enemy says of you. Even if it's true, it's a stupid thing to do. Which is the kind of thing Zionist government propaganda is very lacking foresight. But he adds up saying, update, the person who posted I Love Hamas stickers at UBC and falsely attributed to the pro-Palestine group was associated with Halil, which is a huge international Jewish group. And so here's the next post saying, update. Did I forget to go back? Hold on. Yeah. Her commenting on it. The pro-Israel student group Halil were behind putting I Love Hamas stickers around the University of British Columbia and falsely attributed it to Palestinian student groups, then cried crocodile tears about how unsafe they felt on campus, which is literally what happened. This was just showing the update. And this belief that just saying, Halil claims it has since terminated its relationship with the contractor who allegedly spread the stickers, but who was the contractor, and nobody's ever been able to find out. Here's what they posted. This is the UBC Social Justice Center, which is the name of that group, which again, the point is, it's like, obviously, you know, the idea of social justice in general today is kind of a joke for most people because of the woke ideology nonsense. But that should not be the reason you kind of, that should have nothing to do with the topic, right? Coming in this from an objective kind of fact-based perspective, it's obvious what ultimately happened. My point is that a lot of the right-leaning discussion took this in the direction you might expect when it first came out. Of course, these woke maniacs are all pro-Hamas. That's what a lot of these people are doing still right now. But they get played because their partisanship, either they want to fall into it because they're benefiting from it, or people fall for their big talking head sides of the partisan that say those things and will think they can trust them. But he says they're demanding an investigation into the connection between Halil and this supposed contractor, given the severity of the incident and how much it actually caused, which was crazy. Saying, please read. They're simply saying Halil BC has confirmed, and they have, and they did at the time, that an individual who was associated with their organization until earlier this week is responsible for the dangerous stickers. The stickers falsely framed them as being, you know, pro-Hamas. And it basically goes on to say they caused a bunch of threats and deportation and violence to, they say, Muslims, migrants, and people of color, which was what happened. You know, people were attacked, people were kicked out. I mean, nobody seems to care about that side of this. All you want to frame is the alleged threats towards Israelis and Jewish people, which, again, I guarantee there's some of that. Any of it is real. The point is about whether it's an unsized reality currently in the situation. It says the labor and emotional energy that this incident has demanded and continues to demand is tracks from urgent, important organizing work as Israel continues to commit genocide in Palestine. That's obviously why they targeted this group. It says, of course, Halil BC has not reached out to them to apologize for what they did. Of course not. And this is from Halil BC, which is the British Columbia chapter of this group. It says, it has come under our attention that unbeknownst to Halil, an independent contractor, which they refuse to identify, has participated in the distribution of offensive stickers around UBC campus. And why would they do that? A contractor? So someone's delivering some soda pop and they just go, I'm going to put some stickers up that literally say what you guys are accusing them of. I mean, it's literal. I mean, it's that this is really hard to believe. The actions of this individual do not in any way reflect the values of Khalil, which, you know, you get where that goes. I don't believe that personally. You guys can decide for yourselves. Here was the article. If you want to read more, I'll read you a couple parts from it. It says, an independent contractor previously associated with Khalil distributed, quote, offensive stickers on campus, according to a social media post. Khalil's post did not specify who the contractor was, nor what the content of the stickers were, which we know. Khalil declined to comment further. Why? What are you being so secretive about? It says in a statement to that's a weird name for a platform, UBC wrote, like Odyssey, but UBC, it wrote the university was made aware an independent contractor that, quote, has worked with Khalil. It says, quote, I heart Hamas alongside the UBC social justice name and the logo. And it says, yeah, and the point there is to remember that they put that on there. So how would some random independent contractor know to put their name on a sticker? Like, you see, there's no way they weren't involved with this, in my opinion. Now, it says the Social Justice Center denied their involvement with the stickers and wrote over the weekend that they were concerned the campaign will fuel incendiary environments, which is literally what happened. But nobody wrote screaming, pearl-clutching articles about how they were put at risk and they felt unsafe. Why is that? Even though there were articles even written after this that went on to pretend that Jews felt unsafe at this school. It's obviously being driven. It says Muslims, and I already read that they felt more at risk. They called in the university, in fact, to investigate the connection between the contractor and Khalil, which they don't seem to have ever done. And you could read more about this group if you want to understand. You know, it's a huge Jewish organization that around it says inclusive Jewish campus organization in the world. You know, I just find it interesting, too, that, you know, it's obvious. Nobody should look at this and either think, one, that every Jewish person involved is a problem, or that every Khalil organization, like, it's about Zionism. And Zionism uses Judaism as a vessel, as plenty of Orthodox Jew organizations and even non-Orthodox Jewish organizations in the world will tell you right now, speaking proudly about it all around the world. Zionism is not Judaism. They do not represent us. Israel is not it's constant, and it's becoming more and more prominent by the day. But the point is that they use things like this, so I promise you there is a Zionist influence in some level to what they ultimately do. And in other ways, convince otherwise people with good intentions to think that they're doing the right thing for Israel. Now, here's on top of all of that, don't forget the obvious history of all this, right? The reality that basically creating false flags to get Jewish people to go in a certain direction is what Zionists do. This is an article from 2023. Zionist role in 1950s attack on Iraqi Jews confirmed by operative and police report. But we've also played the clip of Avi Shalom many times talking about this exact discussion, right? About how they were threatened, and that he and this is a very, very prominent Israeli historian, Avi Shalom, speaking about the history of how where he grew up, Iraqi Jews were driven by Zionist bombings.
Iraqi Jews were convinced that Israel had a hand in uprooting them. After the 1948 war, there was mounting popular hostility towards the Jews in Iraq. 5 bombs exploded in Jewish sites. The series of bombs created a panic which led more and more Jews to register to leave the country. I met an elderly friend of my mother's, an Iraqi Jew called Yaakov Karkukli, who had been in the Zionist underground. One member of his group, Yosef Basri, a very, very intelligent Jewish lawyer, and his assistant, Shalom Saleh Shalom, were responsible for 3 out of the 5 bombs. Basri's controller was an Israeli intelligence officer named Max Binet, who was based in Tehran.
Prominent historical fact. The reality is, guys, this is nothing new. And I mean, this is a Zionist tactic, and it's obvious. Now, let's get into a broad discussion about this. This just relates to any, you know, there's a very clear history, and this goes well beyond Zionist Israelis. I mean, just look up Jesse Smollett, right? These things happen, right? There's a reality behind faking hate crimes and using them to marshal emotional responses against people you don't like. So in this case, here's an example that was a very prominent one that you may not have remembered was proven to be a lie. a manufactured lie that was used to create the illusion that, and they're still using today, to pretend that all these campuses were at threat and all the Jewish people did not feel safe, which then the ADL went forward with, and they put up all, it's, I'll show you more of that in a second. But of course, Charlie Kirk, Jewish students at the Cooper Union are trapped inside the school library with the doors locked as pro-Palestinian Hamas sympathizers, just people fighting for Palestinian self-determination, move their protest, of course, because it's not a protest if you're Palestinian, that means you must be terrorists, indoors once they found out Jews were sheltering inside. Think about what he just said. Okay, he's lying. 100%. Now, I don't know if it started with him or not, but people like this, these wildly pro-partisan, whether you know it or not, you're dishonest because the partisanship circumvents your logic. Quite frankly, though, I think a lot of these people are willfully dishonest when it comes to their partisan narratives. Either way, trapped inside the school library with the doors locked, which may well, whether they were locked or not, and whether they feel they were trapped because of what they were told may be the reality. But the point was that when somehow these people found out there were Jews in there, they rushed in and they were all, that's what he meant to frame that as. But here's the only clip that was circulating. Okay. Now, I reported on this. What you're looking at there was the door, and outside there was the steps where people were collecting, right? And there was a huge sit-in in this area, and they were protesting, and people were clapping and chanting, and apparently there were people there that were, like, I don't know whether or not people recognized that there were people in this room, or whether or not they thought they were Jews or knew that or not. The point is, to argue that they were ever in danger, that there was ever anything happening, violence or whatever else, is a flat-out lie. And you know why we know that? Because it was later reported by the people involved, despite the fact that it went on to make this huge discussion. Here is Richie Torres at the time, October 25th. It says, Jewish students from Cooper Union had to lock themselves in the library in order to escape an aggressive anti-Israel. Complete lie. 100% made up. In America, it says, we should all feel free, have the freedom to be who we are and worship, unless you're Palestinian, though, and you want Palestinian determination. Then you're a Hamas terrorist. Just, this guy is a completely bought-off Zionist shill, as far as I'm concerned. And I know, I don't mean that as an accusation. The guy literally takes funding from Israel, but the point is, he has taken a wildly pro-Zionist, pro-genocide stance since the start of this, so he does not represent Americans, let's put it that way. And I mean that for the very obvious reason, this person is circumventing what most Americans want. But either way, the reason I'm showing you a screenshot is because he blocked me, which, by the way, here's his, you know, plenty of contributions from AIPAC and everybody else. I don't even know why he blocked me. I think I actually did post something underneath one of his really dumb tweets, and he blocked me because that's how political discourse goes these days, right? Hey, will you vote? That's what was I going to say? You know, like, I could very well be one of his constituents. They don't care. Like that guy we just saw. Oh, you're a Palestinian, and I don't want you to vote for me. It's like, when have you ever seen that before? These people are losing their minds. In any case, as they block Americans, the reality was that this got quickly out of hand. This was another political, this was a New York City Council Minority Whip, 48th District, at least right now. Here she is saying, demanding the president of Cooper Union step down for not keeping Jewish students safe. When you see how this was actually, how it actually ended up, you'll realize how ridiculous this is. Somebody pushed this. There's something driving this. And what we're showing today is the engine behind all of this. These are faked events. And what she says here is, they should step down if she can't keep them safe. Just that face does enough for me right there. She's ridiculous. Here, by the way, was the 26th of October. Michael Tracy points out Josh Hawley, of course, another one of these blind supporters, will go and they go, he's the guy that will make these. I mean, it's not just Israel, by the way. He was the one that was making those absurd points, asking the Singaporean guy about China, and he made a fool of himself. Probably doesn't think so, though. Probably thinks he got the, you know, look at the way he smirked when he denied it right there. We all know he's CCP. Like, that's the kind of absurd mindset you get from blindly, you know, blind assuming partisan minds. But he says, Josh Hawley, hailing the passage of his resolution condemning pro-Palestinian protesters, that's it, just because you're pro-Palestine, you must be a terrorist, calls on college administrators to punish political speech that he deems unsafe and violent. He uses the fake Cooper Union barricade story to push this. That's how this works. And gets a resolution to go forward in regard to condemning simply anything Palestinian because free speech? Think about how crazy this is. Here's the Times of Israel. Jewish students locked in as the protesters chanted free Palestine. Well, did they get trapped? Did they choose to go in a door and lock their... I mean, of course, the story makes it seem as if they're always a threat and the big... Well, let's get to the reality here. Here's what the police chief said. You know, this is, I think, the one we actually showed you.
Morning. Just in regards to Cooper Unius, I want to get a couple of key facts right before I give you a quick timeline. We were aware of the walkout protest rally at the school yesterday.
Because that's the point. They did a walkout. They went and they ended up sitting in this area. It had nothing to do with the fact that there were some Jewish people in this room. If, by the way, for since we can clearly tell this was a manufactured illusion, it wouldn't surprise me if those Jewish people were sent into that location in order to create the illusion that there was somehow a problem there. Go ahead and call me a conspiracy theorist all you want. If you can't recognize by now that these kind of things are literally manufactured exactly like that, I'm not saying I know that's what happened here, but if you can't recognize that happens, you're choosing not to. That's willful ignorance. I'm going to go over, even the first half of the show proves that. Just wait. Wait until we go over the latter half of the show to show you how many times very clear examples of Zionist Israeli false hate crimes have happened. And the fact that we can't even bring that up, it just shows there's no other category where you can see this many examples. Any month of any year, no matter how far you want to look, you'll find an example of an Israeli faking a hate crime. I could have given you 14 hours of nonstop cover. I mean, and yet you search up any other group, religion, race, and hate crimes fake, you'll find a few examples, but not like that. I'm telling you guys, there's a very clear issue here.
School officials asked us to be there. Our police were there from start to finish.
Yep.
The school asked us if we would be in plain clothes, and that's a protocol that we're going to change and talk to all the schools citywide about that protocol.
Why would they be in plain clothes? See, this actually adds to the point. I think there was more going on here, like from an institution level. Asking them to be in plain clothes makes it harder to tell there is police, which means that it's more unsafe if you think there's a threat. But what it really makes it into is that, one, that means it's more likely to happen. Therefore, you can see it happen and then they'll be there to stop it. So that makes it that, you see my point? As opposed to just wanting it to be safe and not having a problem, you want it to be secret. So the problem happens, but then you can stop it. That's about setting up something. That's how it feels to me. Why you would want plain clothes anything when you are arguing a presence is there to stop violence is, I mean, to me, it proves the point.
There was no direct threats. There was no damage.
Yep.
And there was no danger.
Yep.
To any students in that school.
Yep.
Like I said, our cops.
That made people very unhappy. And by the way, even though we said that, it kept going. They didn't stop. They kept using it, like Josh and the rest of them. They kept pretending that's what happened. Therefore, and that's what you see. We'll prove they lied about this thing, but Elon Levy will keep using it for the next 14 years. That's how that works.
They're all day from start to finish. They were with the 20 protesters that were in the school. They were there at the library. The library doors, the students were not barricaded.
See? They lied, guys. They flat out lied about that.
The doors were open but closed.
See that? They weren't even locked. The doors weren't even locked. And yet you got Richie Torres, you've got the New York politician, you've got the state of Israel just blatantly lying about this. How can we not put these pieces together? The point is, we do. But there's a set in stone infrastructure, if you will, that's designed to not let these things change the conversation. And they know it. We all see it. Literally everybody sees it. But there are people with vested interest in maintaining the status quo.
School administrator thought it was prudent to close the doors and place private security as the protesters were coming down the stairs.
And that's only because the school may ask them for that. There's no indication that they would have been violent to anybody. In fact, I argue they are peaceful protesters based on the inherent fact that they see a necessity in demonstrating that for people that are trying to misrepresent them.
So at approximately 1 o'clock, the protest started in front of Cooper Union. It was a walkout of students. So roughly 70 pro-Palestine, about 20 Israeli students. If you could imagine parallel to each other, the Palestinian students were chanting. The Israeli students were silent. This went on for a couple hours, but what happened was people who were passing by the school, community people, were getting upset with that protest and were starting to get agitated from that point of view.
Okay, this is very clear. So first of all, if you're going to tell me that they were beating down the door to get to the Jews, then why weren't they going after the Israelis that were right in front of them? Oops. Logic. You know, oops always ruins the Zionist propaganda, right? But how about the idea that the only reason people got angry is because the people passing by didn't like what the Palestinians were protesting for? That's what happened. So what actually happened was I'm not going to say Israeli, but people that are at least sensitive to the Israeli topic got mad that people were saying free Palestine. They weren't saying anything derogatory. I went over this when it happened. They were going free Palestine. And even if you want to pretend from the river to the sea means something, then if you say that, then it better matter to you that it's literally on the Likud charter for Netanyahu's party, or that they Netanyahu, Eli David, they've all posted it publicly online and said it will only be Israel. So you can't play this both ways. They didn't say anything violent. It got agitated when other Israeli supporters got there and said, "You shut up." That's what happened. He's telling it to you right there.
Around 3:30, 20 of the 70 protests from the Palestinian side went into the school. Now, they're supposed to scan in. They are students. Let's be clear. All the people here were all students part of this institution. As the 20 kids went into the school, they're supposed to swipe in, but they kind of just rushed past the swipe. An administrative error that the school is going to deal with today from school officials. From there, the 20 students want to go up to the president's office, which they did. They got inside the office, the waiting area, if you will, and they were chanting.
It's no different than any other protest we've seen in any other context. Feel free to quibble about the, oh my God, they rushed past the barrier of the, you know, it's like jumping a turnstile at a subway. Like, I mean, it's not hard. It only becomes this big thing when you make it into a big thing because of the lies around it. They protested in the office because they're trying to get the attention of the administration. Just like any other situation, like Jewish Voices for Peace, peacefully protesting inside the Capitol, right? The point is that you can obviously see the core points. There was no barricade. The doors weren't locked. So let's go back to the obvious lies. Just in case, so you don't miss these, the reality of how many of these people lied about this. Here's Charlie Kirk lying about what happened. Here is Richie Torres. Where's saying that they locked themselves in the library. Why? Because somebody told him that. And he lied about it. Or who knows if he even knew he lied. He's just too, I guess, intellectually immature to even have a moment. I mean, or doesn't care. Because he just shared it online with a huge following about a very important topic because someone told him that. Nobody should vote for people like this. These people are children. Here is the New York representative lying about it as well. Josh Hawley lying about it to suppress your rights as Americans. Why would anybody vote for people like this on either side of the legal delusion of the paradigm? Now, here is CBS News. NYPD stresses Cooper Union students were not barricaded in the library during the Palestinian rally. Doesn't stop people from lying about it. Here's Fox News. NYPD says no direct threat to Jewish students during the protest. New York Times. How a 6-second video, because that's the only thing that went around, turned a campus protest into a national firestorm. No, what turned into a national firestorm was Zionist propaganda and massive political background. It says in the 6-second video clip, pro-Palestinian protesters are heard chanting and what appeared to be banging on the doors. But I kind of see that as, you know, I don't think it was directed at the room. I don't think they were even cognizant of the room. And I think it was just about banging on, you know, the walls and whatever, making noise. But I don't know. I wasn't there. Either way, not barricaded, not at threat, didn't happen. It says inside a small group of Jewish students looked on nervously. I mean, they weren't even facing the camera. So I'm not even sure how you can say that. But it says then the clip ends. It is the briefest snapshot of a frightening moment. Only when you pretend it's what they claimed it was, it's not. It goes on to say, but within a couple of hours, images of the encounter spread globally. That's pretty interesting. That's rare in many cases. It says the pro-Palestinian protesters had dispersed just a few minutes later. That's actually what happened. And no one was injured or arrested. But the story seemed to grow. How'd that happen? Because people like Richie Torres were put to task. By who? That's the question, isn't it? Posts that went viral falsely claimed that the library had been barricaded to protect the students inside from an angry mob, that the police were afraid to get involved. No, they were there the whole time. All lie. The Union Cooper protest quickly became a symbol. And that's what it was about. To some. Of rising anti-Semitism on campus college. That's been a narrative ever since, even though it was rooted in a lie. It doesn't matter. Same thing with the propaganda they're spinning about everything every day about Israel. They're lying in such egregiously obvious ways, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it does, but ultimately what they're doing it for is just volume. Just massive, pumping it out there, getting one more person, getting muddying the field. This was about just setting the tone and then just move forward saying it was the way it was. It's like the U.S. still pretending that Assad gassed children. Still to this very day, Nikki Haley was saying it when she was doing her ridiculous election, her false election run. She was saying Assad gas children, even though every single one of those examples have now been proven to have, at the very least, been the rebels, if not the U.S. government themselves. But nobody cares. It says the Cooper Union, typically a low profile, was mentioned repeatedly at a Republican presidential debate. What do you know? See how that works, guys? Because the Republican side of this has a vested interest in this. It says now, amid questions from Congress about how campuses are reckoning with anti-Semitism, and by the way, don't hear that as the your left-right paradigm aside, your government blindly supports Israel. Every angle of this. The ones that are pretending they don't right now on the left, they're trying to win back your support. That'd be my opinion. But it says now, amid questions from Congress about how campuses are reckoning with anti-Semitism, are they? The Cooper Union is one of more than a dozen colleges under federal investigation following complaints. Well, how many of these complaints are completely fabricated, manufactured, or lied about? And with campus's speech under an intense public microscope, the episode at the library and its aftermath show how a brief moment free of context or nuance, or let's just include blatant lies, can be repurposed by partisans in service of broader political rhetoric. Now, a brief window of some kind of truth coming from New York Times. Shocking, I know, but it's the truth. Partisans will lie to you. Gasp, I can't believe it. But this is what's happening on a broad scale, but specifically when it comes to the Zionist manipulations. Here's Glenn Greenwald. This was one of the students at a different school. A Jewish student, this is University of Washington, around the same time frame, by the way, a couple days before, actually. An adult, he says, was turned into a hero and martyr for weepingly begging a campus administrator to keep her safe by banning a peaceful pro-Palestinian protest. Imagine the mockery if this were a trans or black or an immigrant student doing the same. There's a bunch of he writes about here, but the point here, it was a peaceful protest. They were simply, in her mind, either she's lying or she has actually been convinced by other radical Zionists that them saying free Palestine means they want to murder her family. So you can imagine that might actually scare her, and she might actually, because she's being lied to, or she's lying for the jet. It doesn't matter. It's not true. And here she is, crying, screaming, please, I can't believe. And what did this do? Well, it got shown. It got shared. It got talked about. It got used to pretend that all these Jewish people are so terrified, but it wasn't based on anything valid. Here is the same councilwoman from New York. Literally, again, this is the same story, by the way, lying. The Jewish students barricaded in the library were terrified. Some were shaken. She's lying. 26th. Completely proven. But she didn't even delete the tweet. They don't care. Something was told. In my opinion, something put her to task. Because if you knew it turned out to be false, you'd go delete the tweet. Because people like that do that. They're liars. But no, it's still there. Even though you can prove, even from corporate media, that she lied. You need to ask yourself why that would happen. Now, let's get into a much broader perspective here about lies, about fake hate crimes. Here's an archive from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. 5 Jews arrested for painting swastikas on Israeli consulate. November 5th, 1963. Oh, that's a long time ago. Some not really new. Now, why would that happen? I mean, you really could look at it from a couple of different angles. I'll include the articles we get further down the line here. Oh, it's not that one, but one of them I have on here about the overlap. Oh, here it is. Nazism versus Zionism versus Nazism. Israel's connection to extremist ideology and ADL's history of faking Nazi marches. We'll go over some of that in a second. The point, though, is that it's not, you could look at it a couple ways. Is it possible that these Zionist Jews at the time were pro-Nazism? That may sound crazy to some people that have yet to dive into the conversation, but the reality of the overlap of the history is undeniable. The foundational elements of Zionism more than once tried to align themselves with Nazi Germany. You could look it up on Wikipedia. It's not that hard to understand. It's confusing, isn't it, when you only listen to the current narrative? Now, my point in saying that is just to throw out one of the, I guess, hypothetical possibilities, that they just wrote the swastikas because they believed it. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think this is an obvious example of the fact that Zionists will align with whatever fascist organization will give them power, which is why they also tried to align themselves with Stalin, ultimately ended up working with the Nazi organization, as even Dan Cohen pointed out, well past the final solution. Since I said that, I'll include what he wrote. They also include the tweet below it. shows the Haaretz article. See, this is the document showing you that they tried to align themselves with Nazi Germany. He says the Lehi continued, the Lehi Party, which I'm mispronouncing it, I think, is one of the foundational elements of Zionism, continued to seek an ally with Germany even after the final solution began. Which, by the way, if you're going to pretend that the Holocaust in Nazi Germany was the reason Israel was created, how do you make sense of the fact that they worked with them past that very event? It doesn't make any sense. Here is Haaretz that is literally breaking this down. Zionist militias' efforts to recruit Nazis and fight against British are revealed. It's in the discussion. You can read about it for yourself. So back to the point, they don't believe in what they're pretending they do. That's what I think. And I think that's what a lot of evidence is coming out for. But either way, they were Jewish people that painted swastikas and then blamed it on Arab populations. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me include these for you. Now, Haaretz, by the way, there's another point I'm going to make in another show. Just because Haaretz is saying something true doesn't mean they're always saying. There's writers and different agendas. I mean, there's new stuff coming out that Zachary Foster was just saying they were, you know, basically gaslighting in regard to the rape conversation. But either way, it is corporate Israeli media. That's what's important. Because if they're saying the opposite of what the main narrative is, that this seems relevant. But here's one from 2012. Jewish man arrested for swastikas, anti-Semitic calls. January 16th, 2012. This one, I believe, is the same story. This is from the Telegraph. Jewish man arrested after posting swastikas on doors. On arrest on hate crime charges on Monday, accused of making anti-Semitic telephone calls to his mother and elderly women and putting swastikas on apartment doors. Here's one. Jewish man accused of spray painting swastikas on own home. Every one of these, we're talking about like the use of a, you know, paint it on the door and say, look at what they're doing, right? Trying to pretend it's people who hate Jewish people, whatever that ends up embodying in the moment. Right now, it's obviously Palestinians, the way that they're pretending it is, not the truth of it. 2017, this is. March 22nd, 2017. Painted on his own house. Here's even Times of Israel. Same guy. Arrested for painting swastikas on his own home. Here is one from 2017. Israeli man arrested for spray painting swastikas on synagogues. Right? I mean, okay, so the point is, when they see it, they see it on synagogue. What do you get? You get the media that goes, oh my gosh, look at the anti-Semitism. And they don't go Israelis. They talk about Arabs. They talk about Palestinians. They talk about Muslim culture. That's what they always get. You get the Laura Loomers out there with their hair on fire saying Islam's going to kill us all because they're lunatics. Here is a big story from 2018. A U.S. Israeli, and there's a huge overlap in this, we'll get a point about Israelis in the United States. And for my opinion, not only just faking things like this, but also doing it in what I think is from a larger agenda stemming from overseas. And I'll prove that to you. But again, let me state it again. I said in the beginning, in no way does this mean, or does it mean that I think that this represents every Israeli, every Jewish person, every anything for that matter. All it means is you're looking at examples of both Jews, Israelis, or people in the pro-Zionist mindset faking anti-Semitism and then using it to blame on their enemies. So if you know that happens at all, it should factor in, as we just went over a story about fake stickers being used to start this movement, or going over to the fake stickers we started with. Rape is resistance. Now, who's starting to get a feeling that that might not be real? U.S.-Israeli bomb hoaxer given 10-year jail sentence. Here's the actual release from the United States government. U.S.-Israeli man indicted for what? Hate crimes, threats to Jewish community centers, Israeli embassy, anti-defamation, conveying false information. That's what this was. These were fake bomb threats used to blame on Arab communities. Here is Washington Post. An alleged hate crime at a Jewish cafe was the most brazen a community had ever seen. It was all fake, police say. See my point? That's what you're getting. Spray painted the word Jew on the side of the wall. It was fake. It was a fake hate crime. Here's one from Reason. Anti-Semitic attack on Jewish-owned restaurant is another hate crime hoax, cops say. Another. Here's one from 2022. Jewish woman arrested for painting swastikas in park. Now, you understand, these are not people, it's not because this Jewish person hates Jewish people. It's because they're painting them, either because they later say it's because they wanted to show people what the world's like, or, you know, whatever. They lied about it. And it got used to pretend there's anti-Semitism exploding everywhere. Here, and even if that's even the truth, it's still, these are fake. Jewish woman busted for scrawling swastikas in Brooklyn Borough's Park. That's the same one. Here is, excuse me. Here's one that comes, this goes back. And now these are separate because these aren't necessarily connected to Israel in the conversation, but just to show you a broad point about how these things happen. Again, think about people like Jussie Smollett. This is one from 2004. Teacher gets prison in hate crime hoax. And it says a former psychology professor at Claremont McKenna College was sentenced Wednesday to a year in prison for spray painting her own car with racist and anti-Semitic slurs, claiming that unknown vandals had done it. What do you think that does? The obvious. It becomes a people like the ADL or anybody, groups that people just want to jump on it will go, see, we're in risk. There's racism everywhere, which, by the way, is not necessarily false, but the reality is that this is not true. Here's one, and it goes even broader. This is from 2022, but by Ukraine. Sources say oligarch-funded scheme to paint swastikas in Ukraine. Now, realizing that this is not that hard to understand, because what we're talking about here is sort of a reverse conversation, because you can quite literally prove that they're proudly supporting Nazism and supporting neo-Nazi ideologies and fascist entities and proudly saluting with their Nazi salutes, like openly, literally seeing them do it on an NBC clip and then pretending that we don't understand what we're looking at. My point is just to see how if you can have the obvious reality and they go, well, here's an example of how, but in this case, we can see them literally faking it. And then the momentum still becomes, well, we're all at risk. The point is facts don't play into this conversation. It's obvious that people in power continue to use whatever they want, whenever they want. Now, here's one from the 2020. This is into after October 7th, December 19th, 2023. Hundreds of false bomb threats to Jewish institutions are believed to originate from outside the U.S. Now, with everything we just saw, what do you think that means? Here's what it says. These false threats came just days after the end of Hanukkah, and amid a spike of threats against the Jewish community documented since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. Now, is that what happened? You realize they're pointing at the things we just went over. Those are all the prominent events. There's a lot of these same events in these colleges that are all generally the same discussion. They chanted Free Palestine. We're all at risk. Right? I mean, again, here's Wyatt Reed showing you what they're doing. This is Greenblatt from the ADL literally saying hate crimes, anti-Semitism is up 900%. What are they pointing at? Exactly what we just showed you. Even the ones we can prove are debunked. But he goes over just some of the statements. You know, things like avenge Gaza, or this one says, or people ripping down posters, or this one is, it says, we stand with Israel. Two individuals defaced a poster saying we stand with Israel. This one says, graffiti found on the wall that says, glob, oh wait, oh, river to the sea. Things like that. Things that are not anti-Semitism, but because you claim that they are. Or it's just like January 6th. As we told you and as we've all seen, they literally investigated anyone that was there that day and then said every one of those investigations was a domestic terrorism investigation. And then what do you know? The statistics exploded. Domestic terrorism is everywhere. Well, no, you just investigated all these innocent people under that guise, and then those numbers exploded because you named them all domestic terrorist investigations. It's very simple. Same thing's happening here. Here's the Time magazine. The Israeli-Hamas war is leading to an uptick in hate crimes. Is it, though? If it really is, then depending on what we're talking about, maybe that's the case. Because I see a lot of negativity and a lot of actions being done against people that are standing in peaceful protest. But either way, it's very obvious to see that this is not a unique thing that we're talking about. So here's something from, this one's posted October 22nd, 2023. So post-October 7th. This is Barry Weiss saying, this was scrawled outside of our offices this week. And I think I might have pointed at this. And it says, F Jews and F Israel, okay? Says, if the anti-Semites who did this think it will intimidate me and the journalists of whatever this non-journalistic platform is, they don't know me, they don't know us, and they have no idea what we stand for. God, who knows? Who knows what actually happened? It very well could have been somebody that painted that. But what I think, what I've heard from people that know Barry Weiss, and like this guy says the same, she's apparently a notorious kind of power hungry, like we'll do anything. Will fake anything, has no shame about trying to get more clout and influence, like we saw with many other things she's done. And he says, I'm going to need an independent investigation here, and cites the LA Times, which I forget what that actually said. It was Oh, right. Just, you know, showing a teacher lying about this from before. But this is what he says later is Barry had, and this is someone who knows her. Barry had a history of fabricating stories when I worked next to her at the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm calling for an independent inquiry. Like the same thing I hear from anybody that seems to know her, that she doesn't have any very strong. I don't know her, so I'm not going to say I know that. But these are people that have spoken about her. So that's all I'm reporting on. Either way, after what we just saw, I'm beginning to think that there's more of this and people that this is a common tactic that's coming from people that are willing to both get attention, but also manufacture solution. In no way does that mean that this is not happening or hasn't happened or is impossible of happening. But everything we just showed you is provably a fake hate crime. Here's another interesting dynamic to it. This is CAIR was the Council on American Islamic Relations. It says the official of that suspended from Maryland hate crimes panel after posting about, guess what? Fake Israeli babies being beheaded. November 21st. So that aged terribly because the reality is literally everybody now knows that the 40 beheaded babies narrative was a fake story. But he spoke up early and said, that's a fake story. And everybody attacked him for it. He's right. He was one of the early, just like any other situation, like with the COVID situation where Jensen got completely strung up because he said they're making more money off of COVID stuff. Well, they obviously were, but they just never admitted he was right. Just like this, even though we all know they'll never come back and be like, sorry, man, you are right. And we all admit it because they're not honest people in any of these conversations. Just showing you that as we're seeing fake hate crimes be publicly displayed, he gets exposed for fake news. Or exposed or called out for fake news that was actually accurate. It's just ridiculous. Now, I've talked about this discussion we're going to point out next that I just showed you in a show on the 24th of February. Zionism versus Nazism, Israel's connection to extremist ideology, ADL's history of faking Nazi marches. I'll play just the beginning of this clip and then I'll go over this point that I think is very important to understand that all of these Zionist organizations are known for doing stuff like this.
You may remember in February 1979, there was a big uproar because someone by the name of James Gutman applied for a permit to lead a march of Nazis through downtown Philadelphia. Now, eventually, some enterprising reporters did an investigation. You know what they turned up? James Gutman was none other than Mordecai Levy, who worked with the Anti-Defamation League and later split off that to form the Terrorist Jewish Defense League. This was an operation that was run by the ADL. They wanted to have a Nazi march in Philadelphia. Why? Because how can they raise money to justify their existence if American Jews don't think there's a lot of anti-Semitism? So what better thing to do than to slap swastikas on a couple of people, lead them on a march through town, and then the next day, the ADL comes marching in and says, look, there are Nazis on the streets. You need to give us money so we can protect you. And then, on top of that, have a tax-exempt status. This was not a one-time operation.
Ring a bell? Patriot Front? Anyone? That's what I believe this is, 100%. My opinion, you guys can do your own research on it. Watch this show. It's worth it. But this clip is important because the reality, actually, I think this is, yeah, it's 1:12. Same clip. The reality is that you could prove this. It's not just his statement. I did my due diligence on this. It's also from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. And you've already seen me talk about this, but just very quickly breaking this point down. What he's talking about is easily proven. Here is the Jewish Telegraphic Agency writing. Officials said Gutman, who he's talking about, had listed a P.O. box as his address and the name of Frank Collin, leader of the Nazi group in Chicago, who obtained a worldwide publicity last year when he announced plans to stage the march. Now, we also talked about the Chicago overlap. I'm not going to get into that today. And switched to the rally in Chicago. Now, it says he was reported to have said he never heard of Gutman, and was that there was no Nazi party in Philadelphia. So the point was, Gutman, Frank Collin, this is Mordecai Levy. To show you this, here is the New York Times side of this article. Interestingly, nobody's big-time journalist can piece these two public stories together, and here's what it says. This is a different story at a different event. Court testimony yesterday, and this was on the 24th, 1979, suggested that the man identified as James Gutman different situation, same name, may have been using a stolen identification card when he sought the permit. The Philadelphia police sergeant said another man, identified as Mordecai Levy, had also been arrested using that fake card information. Mr. Levy has been associated with the Jewish Defense League, which was the kind of like militant arm of the ADL at the time. Okay, so obviously you have a situation over here where you've got Gutman pretending to be Frank Cullen, who is exposed for being a leader of a Nazi group, right? And then over here, you've got Gutman being caught using an identification card that Mordecai Levy had been caught using in the past. This is obvious. This is the ADL, which is why this is why the reporter was saying this, pretending to be a Nazi march, literally using one of their ad entities to pretend to be a Nazi. Here is an article is written about it, 1996, ADL provocateurs at work. It says, on February 16, 1979, Mordecai Levy, a paid operative of Erwan Sewall's ADL fact-finding division, used the alias James Gutman to obtain a rally permit from the National Park Police for a pro-Nazi demonstration. That's what happened. And there's also an overlap in the Chicago, Skokie, Illinois side of this. But if you want to know more about the whole thing, watch the show. Actually, this one here. There's a lot to it, but I don't want to go in too deep because I have more to talk about to finish. But just to end this segment, this is another Haaretz article. Revealed how Israel turned Nazi war criminals into Mossad agents, you know, because totally against the whole Nazi thing, right? We're lied to, guys. We're lied to about damn near everything. If you think this is insulting or offensive, well, then you have a block up against the truth because of this topic. It's information, and it's being broken by the leading Israeli platform. Written in June 1st, 2023. Now, to finish with a few more points. That's it right there. We're going to finish with a couple more points, then actually end with that point about the weird propaganda going around about whatever they wore at the Oscars, which, of course, you know, I hate them for making me defend all these ridiculous people in Hollywood, but it's important to point out that they are lying about what's happening there. But Elon Levy, of course, Mr. Propaganda, says, this is actually crazy, this one little quick segment. Israel just thwarted, he says, an immediate Palestinian suicide bombing. I'm not sure what he means by an immediate Palestinian bombing. I think he's trying to use words to make it sound more eminent. I don't know. This guy's ridiculous. But he says, in a joint effort, IDF and ISA counterterrorism mission, Jenin resident Mohammed Jabbar, which I'll show you in a second, I'll look up, was eliminated in the Gaza town while on the way to Israel to carry out a suicide attack. Or so we're told. And I simply wrote, wow, those are definitely words typed out on Twitter. That's for sure. No one believes your evidence-free narratives except other Zionists. I mean, there's nothing. There's just a statement online. Now, who knows? Maybe people do that and no news comes out. But this was posted yesterday. Don't you think a suicide bomber being stopped in Israel would be a big story for anybody in the corporate media? Somebody beneath him posted this down here underneath my statement, posted a link as if that's supposed to be like, well, that's a story. And I said, oh, maybe it is a story. I looked at it. Oh, look at that. Maybe it is. Oh, wait a minute. Same day, except this happened in Italy. So clearly not the story that they're saying. So does that mean Eli Levy is just taking that and pretending it happened over here? Because he's clearly saying it happened in Gaza on the way into Israel. This is claiming it was a Palestinians arrested in Italy. But here's the interesting part about this one. It says the suspects are believed to be part of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which, hold on, where was it? Oh, I think it's right here. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade is an armed group that is linked to Palestinian, basically Abbas's Fatah movement or the Palestinian Authority. And of course, they consider a terrorist group. But what's interesting to me is, it says down here, the suspects engaged in pro-Salism, basically trying to convert people into their religion. Really? I mean, come on. To me, this sounds like exactly like the stickers. This sounds like what they're projecting, they pretend they are. Going around with suicide vests, but simultaneously trying to turn you into a Muslim. Like, I mean, it just sounds like a parody of what the reality is. Either way, what I find interesting, and this is why I think this is the case, one, there's zero information about this. Look up anything about any Palestinian suicide bomber. You're not going to find barely even this story, by the way, but this from March 11th. Nothing else. Not even from Israeli media, except this one story right here. And that's it from Times of Israel. And you'll find nothing to back it up other than IDF said. Same town. My point, though, is if it comes from the Palestinian Authority, from Abbas and the Fatah movement, well, let's not forget, guys, that all of Palestine believes that that's a completely co-opted Israeli entity. This is one of the many articles Robert wrote about it. Israel attacks on Jenin and failed, so Tel Aviv uses the Palestinian Authority to do its dirty work. That's how most Palestinians see this. So yet again, if we're going to, like, that's how I would read this. I don't know what this, I'll have to wait to see if there's ever any more information that comes from this, but if I want to give you my thoughts on it, which are not backed up by the facts, just my opinion, it would seem, if I had to guess into it, it makes most sense to me that these are Palestinians that were picked because they're Israeli assets through the Palestinian Authority. They're used and sent over to make it look like the story they're telling. Hamas is going to invade your countries. They're coming through the southern border. One, that's not anything Palestinians in any ethnicity, in any sense, want based on what they're telling you, including Hamas. It's what the narrative they've been spinning is, that Hamas is going to invade the rest of the world, except that's what Israel says they're going to do after the Third Temple, as well as what the Azov movement they support in Ukraine says they're going to do. They're blaming it on Russia and Hamas, though, and this 30,000 strong group inside of an open air prison is somehow going to wage war on the world. It doesn't make any sense. Why would they do this? Certainly doesn't mean it didn't happen. Who knows? Anything's possible. But I find it interesting that it happens to stem from the very group that is clearly controlled by Israel. Here is the search for Palestinian suicide bombing on Twitter. What you'll notice is an endless string of people going, "This just happened," and then citing Eli's tweet or some other text with no verification. Ha, you just got Twitter filed, right? That's what that is. Here's another. This guy's a foreign correspondent. Okay. He says, "No, a suicide bombing was thwarted tonight." Okay. You don't even cite where that came from. The IDF tell you that? Do you know that? Where's the source material? Trust me, bro. I mean, how is that even where we are today? It's so embarrassing. Every single one of them. This is the only image I was able to see that somebody's claiming was apparently what happened, but the image I can't find anywhere else. I looked for a long time. There's nothing. There's no source material, no links. It's just a statement made. And as far as I can tell, it stems back to people like him. And it very well may be that he just saw this story on the same day and either misunderstood it or just decided to lie about it. That's what we've already seen. But let's wait and see what happens, huh? Here is one last point that I pointed at earlier, but just if we're going to make it, the simplest of things, they're lying about big stories and big events. But here's an example of just a very simple lie that they know and that everybody should if we were in an honest situation. Another person today said, "Your daily reminder that Gaza Health Ministry, that the Hamas equals Gaza Health Ministry," saying that they're lying about the numbers. I mean, this is what's so crazy. This is the tablet article that everyone points to, even though that article came out on the 7th, well after the Israeli military had spoken up and said they're using those numbers. So who knows why that came out and why they're pointing at it. The point is, as I said, is there anything Zionists won't lie about? This is the article from an Israeli platform citing the Israeli military. They checked and found that the reports of dead in the Ministry of Health in Gaza are reliable. Here's Vice News saying the same thing, citing the Israeli military. Israeli intelligence, that's why I've been saying that, has deemed Hamas-run health ministry's death toll generally accurate. And if you read the article, they're using their numbers in their own reports. I've been saying it. I've cited it once. I want to make sure you have the tools to be able to prove it to people. And also, here's The Lancet. The Lancet did a scientific study, came out on the 6th of December, that says no evidence of mortality reporting from Gaza ministry inflated. But yet they still post this. They still lie about it. Here's Al Jazeera. UN says Gaza health ministry death tolls in previous wars, credible. So previous wars, credible. Current war, credible. But they'll keep pretending it's not, like Mark Regev will say in a recent interview, just because he wants to downplay the average mom listening to make her think that maybe it's not true. These people are disgusting. They're starving people to death and downplaying what they know is happening. And here's a final example to finish the show that is very obvious. This is the Oscars 2024 was a night of pro-Palestinian advocacy. Right. Well, who knows why they suddenly shifted into, these people are such followers. They're clout chasers, maybe some of them just are not very, in the know, but think that they are, which doesn't mean they're necessarily, who knows who's intelligent, who's not. The point being that you can fall into a specific position where you think you're intelligent. You think the right people are telling you the right things. That's they get your advisors and so on. And you can believe the wrong things. That's very easy. You see it in politicians every day. So all of a sudden you get like everyone in Hollywood suddenly very clearly leaning pro-Palestine. Good. I don't care whether they're misinformed about everything or not. As long as they're fighting for Palestine not to be illegally occupied and not to be murdered every day. The point is, they wore these pins at the Oscars. And what the pins represent is a group called Action for Ceasefire. I think that's what it was. Artists for Ceasefire is what it's called. That's what it's for. Literally created a symbol for this. There's no indication that symbol came from anywhere other than a creation for their created a symbol for call for ceasefire, and it became a symbol for their website. A hand with a heart. Here's today. Today.com saying, why are celebrities wearing red pins to the Oscars? And it simply says the obvious. Fashion usually takes center stage, blah, blah, blah. It's simply saying that the pins are worn in support of artists for ceasefire. So look, first of all, that's what that symbol came from. Secondly, they're all wearing them because that's what they think. So even if that somehow was a symbol taken from something before, which I wasn't able to verify, it doesn't change the fact that they're doing it to protest for a ceasefire. And you turn it into something that makes it grotesque and then pretend that that means that they secretly think that thing. It's just, it's bad propaganda. The bottom line is you can read this whole thing. There's no mention of anything other than that. They wore these because they're supporting ceasefire and supporting this group that is calling for ceasefire. That's what it's about. You can read the whole article if you want. And here's the actual website showing you the symbol. Artists call for ceasefire now. Now, this was signed by lots of prominent actors and all blah, blah, blah. That's what they're talking about. Now, I also searched for the symbol itself using the reverse image search, which is usually pretty good. I mean, but I can't find anything before March 9th, 2024. Doesn't mean that it couldn't be out there somewhere, but so far, it's pretty clear this came from this platform that created it for this movement, okay? Now, here is where this enters the scene. Or actually, no, not this one, this response to it. This is an old tweet from 2021. Michael Dickinson says, today in 2000, this image made headlines around the world. I'm not even getting into the story about the true breadth of what happened and what the overlapping points were. The point is they're claiming this was during the second Nakba or the, what are you saying there? I'll just read it. So today in 2000, this image made headlines around the world. Israelis of these two people lost their way, ended up in the Palestinian-controlled Ramallah, where a mob set upon them, murdering and mutilating them. Oh, no, I take that back. This is from different... I think that was another claim over here. Maybe I'm just misremembering. In any case, just exactly what he said, not what I said. The point being that it shows a guy in the window, sadly scared, with his hands red. Right? Like his hands up, going, you know, don't shoot me, whatever. And it says, one perp held up his blood-soaked hand aloft in celebration. I'm not even going to say that's not true. I don't know. For all we know, it could be a completely manufactured story, leaving out the huge part of what actually happened or what, you know, in general, leaving out the ongoing illegal occupation of brutal apartheid. But either way, it doesn't mean Israelis should be murdered, obviously. But this person says, and today, a 2024 celebrity like Mark Ruffalo promoted celebration of lynching Jews. That's where that seemingly came from for me. I can't find anything else that connects these two things. So this guy, and here's my point, this is why I think this, on March 11th, 9:45 in the morning, just arbitrarily connects this random thing. I mean, how about the fact that I've seen 45 images of Palestinians with their hands all red from blood all over Gaza? Why can't that be the one? How about that innocent child that had bloody hands? Why isn't that what they're representing? It's arbitrarily lofted over at this old story because that's works, I guess, for the narrative. So 9:45 a.m., March 11th, seemingly in a completely unnoticed post until Elon Levy gets a hold of it. 10:51 a.m., March 11th, right? So this is the spokesman for October 7th who just randomly grabs this story from this random post, which wasn't this guy. It was this random person down here, Clark A., with 846 followers. But the timing is undeniable. So then he just grabs that without the image, by the way, and just simply shares it. I don't know if this is what the Hollywood stars wanted to echo with their bloody hand pins, but this is the association it has for Israeli. No, it's not. Nobody in the world would have connected it with this random picture if you hadn't posted that up because you saw somebody else lobbing up a possible propaganda point. That's what that was. He says, and if you're not familiar with perhaps the most iconic image of the Second Intifada, that's what he's referencing, but don't broadcast your ignorance. Okay. not even getting into the story itself, just pretending everything they say about it is true. That's not what I believe. But regardless, not to get buried in that story, the point is about the fact that they're pretending these pins have anything to do with that because Elon Levy saw an opportunity because he's really bad at propaganda and apparently can't think things up for himself. But here's somebody else that short shared it. Rabbi Shmuel Reichman. The truth comes out. A red pin with an image of a bloody hand was launched at the Oscars as a symbolic call for ceasefire. But did you know that the bloody hand is a symbol for lynching Jews? It's not. I mean, it's so crazy how this comes up out of nowhere. And this person says, no, it stands for the stop shedding blood. See the image? Restoring reality doesn't change the facts. Remember that image where they all stood there and protested with bloody hands behind Blinken? This is just a really desperate effort to just redirect this with literally nothing to back it up other than the hand was red in that image. That's it. If you think I'm wrong, look into it. There's literally nothing else that connects these things. They're trying to use this statement as if it's some kind of known historical symbol and hoping you just don't look into it. It says the origin of the bloody hand symbol. And it just references the story that they held up a bloody hand. But nobody has ever used that since then to make, here's my, I'm promoting this bloody hand story. All of a sudden, it just pops up and they just jam it together. It's just like every other story we've gone through today. It is a fake hate crime story. Here, another one. Sarah Lee Whitson says, grateful to artists using their podium to stand for peace, call for ceasefire. And this random person says, they're wearing a pin symbolizing the lynching of Jews. No, they're not. But that's what Elon said. That's what you all just run with, right? Same thing, and this person just posted below saying, imagine if we use this for Gaza. How angry would they be? You should. Grab it. Use it. It has nothing to do with lynching anybody. It's a symbol of peace that's been created to call for peace. So grab it. Use it. You put it in your stupid Twitter account if you want to. Here is Rabbi Shmuley, the real Shmuley, because this guy's a maniac and can't miss out on an opportunity to attack people, especially Jews, should they run afoul of the Zionist agenda. Just like Ben Zionist Jew, or Ben Zionist Shapiro attacking Jews. And of course, that's going to be used to attack me, I'm sure, but that was just a random connect. I meant to say what I actually said afterward. The point here is that this is the example I've shown you countless times of Ben Shapiro attacking Jews, of Rabbi Shmuley attacking Jews, of these Zionists attacking Jewish people because they simply want ceasefire, because they call for a stop of violence. And yet, this person literally stands up. This is one of the guys that did this. He stood up. He won an award for a Holocaust movie. And what he stood up to do was, oh, actually, I forgot to grab the video. It's not. The point is the pin itself. But the guy stood up and made a speech that was actually pretty emotional. Like you could tell he was having a hard time, but he's a Jewish person. And he stood up and said, basically, that I don't agree with this. I don't believe this represents me. And essentially, he didn't necessarily say he renounces his Judaism, but he basically said that I don't want to speak for him. You guys can watch for yourself. But the point was that he doesn't agree with this and that he's wearing the pin in support of this and what's going on in Gaza shouldn't be happening. And of course, this is what Shmuley said. Absolutely disgusting. So calling for peace is disgusting to these people. That should say everything to you. Jonathan Glazer, who deserves so much credit for his incredible Holocaust film, The Zone of Interest, which I loved. By the way, it's funny is he posted something similar the next day and removed all the positive things. It's like, this disgusting person doesn't deserve, like, this is funny because he just has to go full Zionist. But it says, betrayed his people and disgraced himself. See, he's not allowed to have his own opinion. You're not allowed to go afoul of the narratives the Zionists protect. You can't. He says something that had nothing to do with these narratives. But because he says Gaza is a problem, that touches too closely on inching into the reality, which is that you are committing genocide, which means you are acting like everything you pretend you hate. That's the truth. But they can't let that happen. So he says he disgraced himself and trivialized the 6 million martyrs of the Holocaust. How he did that when he made a movie memorializing it? Yeah, try again, Rabbi. You're losing it. He says, when he said that the Israel's war on Gaza was hijacking the memory of the Holocaust. See, he can't allow that. How dare you compare the two? What do you mean? How dare? What right do you have, Shmuley, to put some kind of lockdown on what he's allowed to compare? He's a Jewish person too. You act like you have some control over what other people are allowed to do. You clearly demonstrated that with RFK Jr., who you treated like some kind of asset of yours. He meekly stood back while you spoke for him. But that everybody hear that who wants to vote for this person, or anybody for that matter. He says, how dare you compare the two, you fool? All right, trash, fool. These are the responses you get from other Zionist Jews when Jews dare to speak of their own mind. The whole purpose of Israel's war in Gaza is to make sure there isn't a second Holocaust by committing a Holocaust. So we don't need more of your films because Jews actually remain alive. This guy has lost it, man. Like, this guy is truly one of the most deranged people that I've seen in this whole thing. It's just sad. It is really sad. Now, finally, Khaleesi points out, celebrities wore pro-Palestinian pins last night at the Oscars asking for a ceasefire. Plenty of them did. They also collectively penned an open letter endorsed by 400 artists imploring President Biden to advocate for urgent de-escalation and stop hostilities. So regardless of all their screeching about what they think they did, what they believe they were doing was calling for peace. And that's what they were calling for, because the pin does not come from anywhere other than action or artists calling for ceasefire. Here is one of the little clips of, looks like Rami Youssef speaking about it. Oh, wait. Did I forget that? That's crazy. Let me grab that real quick. And then I'll end with a pretty powerful clip that, for the podcast, before we get to it, just recognize that I'm not going to read it because I want to just end with it. But make sure you come back to the video version and check it out, because it's a very profound thing. As the person wrote in the tweet, as I'm just grabbing this, just kind of fill the time, you'll see it once we get to it. As the person wrote in the tweet, this is how Hamas members are made. And that's the truth about what they're doing, is that ultimately what they do literally creates the drive to resist, which they have a right to. But then, of course, because Israeli funding and manufacturing the situation, there's only a few angles to go in, all of which they call terrorism. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to join something to push back on, and then you become something they call a terrorist. And that works for the narrative. And that's how that goes. And especially, you know, and if people, going back to this clip, since I brought it up, when people try to speak up about this and fight for actual ceasefire, they also get called terrorists. So, you know, that's why they end up doing things like BDS, because that's a political solution. And then that gets called terrorism, right? The point is, you're not allowed to say anything Israel's doing is bad because you get called a terrorist. It should really make you reevaluate what they think a terrorist is.
Explain to everyone what brings you to the Oscars tonight.
We're here for poor things. That's why we want to look, you know, we've got these cool outfits. A bunch of us are wearing these Artists for Ceasefire pins. We're calling for immediate.
Yeah, tell me about the pin.
Yeah, we're calling for immediate, permanent ceasefire in Gaza.
Does that look like Charlie Robinson right there for a second? Even the voice kind of. Is that funny?
We're calling for peace and justice, lasting justice for the people of Palestine. And I think it's a universal message of just, let's stop killing kids. Not be part of more war. No one's.
Can I just cut in for 1 second? I mean, I know I always do when you guys hate it, but. Think about this in a larger sense. Same thing back to the partisan points. Like I can almost hear people on the right side of the two-party illusion, you know, oh, this stupid lefty Democrat, like, you know, it's just whatever. Just because, and by the way, again, not that I even need to say it, but the same thing in reverse. You get the lefties listen to a right-wing person saying something true, and it becomes, oh, he's probably a Nazi. He's probably a fascist MAGA. Who cares? Why? These people need to grow up out of these partisan concepts. The point is, if it's true, it's true. He just said, yeah, let's stop killing babies. I think we can all recognize that's a problem unless you're blinded by the Zionist agenda. The point is that most people see through this. So I just wish we could see beyond all of the wedged issues they create to keep us divided and recognize we all seem to think we all want the same things generally. We're just all manipulated on how we're supposed to get there. That's the real point.
Ever look back at war and thought a bombing campaign was a good idea? And so to be surrounded by so many artists who are willing to lend their voice, the list is growing. A lot of people are going to be wearing these pins tonight. And it's because we want to kind of use where we're at to speak to people's hearts. You know, there's a lot of talking heads on the news. This is a space of talking hearts. And so we're trying to just kind of have that big beam to humanity.
Are you hopeful there will be a ceasefire?
Yeah, there has to be. I don't think that there's no other route. It's just it's taking so long, and you know, the president has now called for it in his State of the Union. The vice president has, and so I think we need.
See, you know, it's just so sad. They're not informed. They're just not informed. He clearly has good intentions, it would seem to me, wanting this to stop. But, you know, it's not true. Kamala spoke up and called for a temporary pause and said ceasefire. Biden's doing the same thing while vetoing actual ceasefires. But so people like this just want to believe in somebody in a process. They're probably going to vote for Biden because he said that. And the sad thing is they're actually the ones perpetuating this. Trump's no better. The point is, though, that it's just sad that we can't, you know, we're so close to being on the same side of just humanity. But all the partisan BS gets in the way. I've said it so many times. It's true, guys. It's true. As somebody asking about who designed the actual image, I actually looked. I wasn't able to find it, but I'll do some more research on it. I'm sure there's some. I just don't know how to come at that. Like how you, I was able to track it back to artist. Like they said, it's not hard to artist for ceasefire. I'd imagine you could probably do some due diligence on where that came from. But I kind of get the sense that it came from them. Like they just made it. But you, if you find out, let me know. Because it'd be interesting to find out if it did stem to, you know, something else or whatever else. So you let me know. But right now, I think the evidence stands for itself that this is a completely baseless connection. Now, we'll end with this clip. As suppressed voice to end and start with, actually, since we started with this clip, says, I will keep reminding you, this is how resistance fighters are born. And it really is. So I use this for the image today, too, on the other half. It just, you have to think about the point I just made. You know, you watch your family get murdered in front of you, doing nothing wrong, completely independent of anything else going on. You're not part of Hamas. You have no stake in the game. You're just sitting there. You're literally doing what they told you to do. You're moving. You're going to the next camp. You're jumping back and forth. You lost all your belongings. And then they murder them right in front of you. Then you turn on the news and you're being called a terrorist. What do you think that does to somebody? Then you want to push back. Maybe you want to push back in the right way. I don't want to be a terrorist. I want to resist in the right way. Where do you go? No one listens to you. There's no Palestinian organizations in the sense that are treated like everything Palestinian, especially right now, is being called borderline terrorism. So ultimately, you don't have anywhere to go because nothing in the international world truly listens to you, especially when you're in Gaza. You can't start anything. No one's listening. You don't have the resources or even the actual physical supplies to do anything. So you join one of the groups that are already pushing back. And they've already created the context for every one of them, even including the PA and Fatah as terrorists. So there's literally no other choice. What you vote for, what you join, everything. So when you leave, when you call everything terrorism, you do anything, you're a terrorist. Pretty easy, right? My point is you end up going, I'm going to fight back. This is how we're going to engage with this. This is the rules-based international order. Okay, I'm coming. That's what you're going to see. And if you think that's wrong, I don't think you're paying attention. I mean, at the end of the day, these people have no choice, and they're simply finding ways to fight for their own freedom. In no way is that praising acts of violence. That is simply acknowledging that when people are put in desperate situations, they're going to push back. Whether it's fighting for food that you drop in a group of thousands of starving people or deciding they're going to not let this happen again to family members that are around them still. I think it is simply the acknowledgement of what humans will do when pushed to the max. And we're here to try to stop them from being pushed and try to just allow a world where they can live in peace. I know, God forbid. So thank you for tuning in today, guys. Always a lot to talk about. It's always hard. But I really do truly believe that the reason this is difficult is because more people are paying attention than ever. I mean, when's the last time you saw all of the blind followers on the red carpet actually acknowledging Palestine? When's the last time you saw any of these things happen? People are seeing through it. But at the same time, there's efforts to try to wrap you back in with another fake hate crime, with another illusion, another propaganda push, another massive event over here that's meant to distract you from Palestine or anything else going on. It's not the only thing happening. There's plenty of other big stuff happening in the world. Haiti, Congo, you know, the border conversation's important. There's a lot of stuff going on. The point is, don't lose sight of the truth around it all because of the narratives that are being pushed and driven from partisan conversations, from international manipulation. Just as we always talk about, guys, do your due diligence. Think about it. Stand back, question things, entertain all possibilities. It's really not that difficult as long as you're okay going, okay, well, where we're at now, we don't know. And that's okay. Put a pin in it, wait for more information, and come back. Everyone's so driven to choose a side on every topic before it's even started. So we get lost in the partisan minutiae. That's what it's ultimately about. So I haven't forgot. I'm going to play the clip. I do it all the time. But I'm going to end with this clip right here. Because truly, guys, I mean, this is what causes whatever they deem radicalization. And all it really is ultimately a justified response. And I just simply mean the armed resistance in the conversation of occupation and military oppression to exactly that. It's what you would expect historically, is people deciding to stand up and fight for them. What do you think Americans would do in the same situation if all of a sudden China came in, occupied the United States, jammed everybody into a little area? What do you think you'd do? I mean, really think about it for a second. What do you think you would do? I think this was a point made on a debate thing. Okay, well, couldn't you see some Republicans joining, creating militias and fighting back for their freedom? Well, yeah. And would that be called terrorism? Probably by the Chinese groups controlling you. And I think what they said in the interview, I'm trying to remember who that was, it was basically saying that you could probably even see some of these Republicans the word Jesus or God when they throw that bomb, right? It's no different than what, just because brown people, Muslims, and infatada, these different words that they misrepresent, it's all the same thing. The American Revolution was an infatada. These are revolts, guys. It all becomes terrorism when Israel's government makes it terrorism. It's ultimately the reality. That's not to say that there aren't actual people that are extreme, but it just means that at a broad stroke, it's armed resistance. And it's a legal act. Thank you for tuning in. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant. سيفجرون رأسك يا ابن الكلب ربنا يرحمهم شهداءنا نحن أبطال نحن غزة أين أنت ودول العربية حماك الله يا غزة علمت كل دول العالم الرجولة سهل قد هيك دائرة العالم كله مش قدر لها شهدنا أبطال إم شهيدة ربنا يرحمها خواتي شهداء ربنا يرحمهم لكن حتى نعادل أيام وحتصور أنت وأنا داسر قبلهم هيك شوف زي ما داسر في 7 أكتوبر لما حكوا جنود الاحتلال